Good morning. Once General Counsel takes his seat, we'll get started here this morning. Thank you, John. Good morning. Today is October 9th, 2019. We are here at the TRPA offices, and I'd like to call this meeting of the Advisory Planning Commission to order. Maria, could you please determine a quorum?
Mr. Alling?
Present.
Mr. Bielna?
Here.
Mr. Calicrate?
Here.
Mr. Cariola?
Here.
Ms. Carr?
Here.
Mr. Drake?
Here.
Mr. Drew? Mr. Ferry? Mr. Grego? Mr. Gavon? Mr. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Larson?
Here.
Mr. Plemmel?
Here.
Ms. Roverud?
Here.
Ms. Stoller?
Here.
Washoe Tribe? Ms. Wright?
Good morning.
And Mr. Young?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Great, thank you so much, Maria. Before we get started, I want to welcome a new member to the commission. Jamie Wright has been appointed by the Tyler Transportation District to join us. That has also changed the APC leadership, as you might see. Our normal chair is now sitting out in the audience. So I'll be assuming the chair position until such time as this body elects a new chair and vice chair. We'll likely be doing that in the next month or two. It is actually on cycle. We were scheduled to elect a new chair and vice chair. So that'll be coming on the agenda, if not in November, in December. So welcome, Jamie. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. With that, I'd like to move on to item two on the agenda, which is approval of the agenda. Do we have any other any items or any changes to the agenda today?
No, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. With that, I'd entertain a motion to approve the agenda. Yes. Good morning. Thank you, Bruce. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
It's an obstacle course to get here.
Indeed.
I think a lot of people are here on the...
If you could please turn on your mic, please. Thanks.
I think many people are here concerning the vacation rental issue. I wonder if that agenda item could be moved up.
I expect the technical amendment should be a rather quick presentation. I know Michael's all keyed up to do that, so I'd prefer to move forward. I do appreciate all the members of the audience who are here, and appreciate your patience, but it should be a rather quick item to move forward. Thanks for the comment, Bruce. I definitely appreciate it. Again, entertain a motion to approve the agenda. Excellent. Moved by Jennifer Carr, seconded by Mr. Buelna. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you so much. Moving to item three on the agenda, public interest comments. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak to the APC on any item that is not before our agenda? Mr. Teixeira.
Yes. Good morning.
Welcome,
for the record,
sir.
Steve Teixeira. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I wanted to rise this morning to join you in welcoming Jamie Wright as the new member representing the Tahoe Transportation District. I will be designated as the alternate soon, so if Jamie isn't available, I will be able to sit at the table once again. But more than that, what I wanted to do this morning was to just thank each and every member of the APC for your support during my time as the chair of the commission, and really do appreciate that. I think we accomplished a lot of great things, particularly adoption of our operating charter and our rules of procedures. Those, I think, were significant accomplishments and allowed the APC to do some extra credit assignments, if you will, over the years. And I think that's an important step that this body took during the time that I served as chair. And finally, but not the least important, is to thank Mr. Larson for being an extremely capable vice chair. And while somebody has to be the chair and somebody has to be the vice chair, I think we were particularly effective as a leadership team, and I always treated Bob as an equal. And the other thing that we established during this time was the opportunity to meet with TRPA management staff prior to every meeting, go through the agenda, help refine the agenda, and we really appreciated the support of agency management and the ability to do that, and I hope that tradition continues. So again, thank you all individually and as a group for your support. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Steve. I just want to echo the comments that Steve was very key in leading the APC to where we are today, and looking at where we've been and where we've come. What we've been able to accomplish is due to Steve's leadership. So very grateful for your service and really appreciate your time, energy, and effort. And I will do my best to try to lead a meeting in a manner as efficiently and effectively as you so capably did for so long. So Thank you again. Nice to see you again. I get a more direct view now of you from this perspective, so I appreciate it. Yeah. Members joining us again, thank you for joining us, Mr. Grego and Mr. Gavon. I think we are good to go now. Definitely a healthy quorum, as it were. Moving to item four, disposition of the minutes. I want to extend my appreciation to Maria for the effort to prepare the minutes. I have no comments, and the minutes look great to me. Does any other member have any questions or comments on the minutes? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Bruce. Any second?
Second.
Excellent. Jennifer Carr jumped in there first, so we'll go for that. So moved by Mr. Grego, seconded by Jennifer Carr. All in favor, please.
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. Mary, motion carries. Thank you so much. Oh, thank you. Sorry. Any abstains? Yes. Excellent. So abstaining would be Jamie Wright and Garth Alling. Thank you so much. Any others? Oh, Hillary. Thank you. Ms. Reverud. Excellent. Thank you. Again, my apologies for coming up to speed on how this all works. So, excellent. Moving forward with public hearings, we have two items on the agenda today. The first is a technical amendment of a number of TRPA code sections. I believe Mr. Conger will be presenting to this morning on that. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Planning Commission. My name is Michael Conger, representing planning staff. I'm here to present on a set of proposed amendments to the Code of Ordinances. This package consists of technical amendments that are intended to clarify existing language. The amendments affect the Code of Ordinances, which is a consolidated set of TRPA's ordinances that are designed to implement the regional plan. The Code of Ordinances last went through a major update in 2012 as part of the regional plan update. From time to time, TRPA staff will package technical corrections as part of routine maintenance of the code. These amendments are intended to address errors and inconsistencies and to clarify existing provisions. The last technical amendment package was approved in April of this year. The proposed technical amendment package includes 11 individual amendments affecting 8 chapters of the code, which are listed on the right side of the screen. Attachment B of the staff report lays out these individual changes and their rationale. The amendments can be broken into 4 categories, which I'll go through individually. I do want to mention that there was an errata sheet that was distributed and that has 2 modifications that staff's recommending. The first modification is that we're recommending to remove item number 7 to allow staff additional time to refine the language. The second is that we're recommending modification to item number 12 to add the word multiplied. Now I'll move on to the 4 categories. The first category relates to references to area plans. The area plan concept was introduced with the 2012 regional plan update. Over time, area plans will replace the existing plan area statements and community plans. At present, there are 5 adopted area plans, with 2 more in development. When the Code of Ordinances was revised in 2012, some sections were inadvertently not updated to reflect the area plan concept. So staff is recommending that language be revised to do 2 things. First, to clarify that residential units can be transferred into area plans. And second, to clarify that commercial floor area displaced by a public service use can be transferred into town centers. In the example on the screen, we refer to sub-districts within an area plan, as the adopted area plans tend to use zoning categories or sub-districts to distinguish land use regulations in each neighborhood. The next category has to do with achievable housing. In 2018, the Governing Board adopted the Development Rights Initiative. This created a new income category for residential bonus units called achievable housing. While most of the references in the code were updated to recognize the achievable category, a couple were missed. So as part of this package, staff is proposing to broaden the references in the Code of Ordinances to residential bonus units to cover all potential income restriction categories. The next category are miscellaneous clarifications. I'll go through these individually pretty quickly, but we can always come back to a slide if we need to discuss any of these in detail. There are 3 miscellaneous clarifications. The first is for accessory residential living space. The subsection we're discussing here involves living space other than a secondary dwelling. Secondary dwellings, which include kitchens and can have more than 1 bathroom and can be rented independently of a main house, are subject to separate provisions. The provisions in this subsection apply to detached living space on parcels that are ineligible for secondary residences. Staff is proposing to update the subsection to correctly refer to both subsection 21.3.2 and any adopted area plan in determining whether a parcel is ineligible for secondary dwellings. The reference to area plans is needed as some area plans include substitute secondary residence standards, and that includes both Placer County and the Tahoe Valley area plan. The next clarification relates to building height. Under current code provisions, a structure on a sloping lot can be divided into up to three segments for the purposes of calculating height. Staff is proposing a revision to the general standard specifying how height is calculated to clarify that these procedures can be applied to the building as a whole or to an individual building segment. And the final miscellaneous clarification relates to buoy fields. Existing language was added to the code in 2018 as part of the shoreline plan. The code limits buoy field capacity based on the boundaries of the buoy field area. Existing language, however, is awkward and unclear, so staff is proposing to reword the language to state that the buoy field is defined by the parcel's lake frontage multiplied by a width of 300 feet. And the final category are editorial changes. These include one editorial revision to the text and renumbering of several tables, figures, and graphs to match the numbering scheme in the Code of Ordinances. Staff recommends that the Advisory Planning Commission recommend approval of the proposed technical code amendments to the Governing Board. This would involve a motion to recommend Governing Board approval of the findings and Governing Board adoption of the ordinance as modified by the errata sheet that was distributed. This concludes staff's presentation, but we are available for any questions. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Michael. I want to extend my thanks for staff work on this. The Exhibit 1 was really easy to follow and very very helpful in terms of following along as to what was being changed, what the rationale was. So thank you for that. It made it really easy to see, you know, what was going on and why. So I appreciate that. With that, I'll open up the conversation to commission comments. Anybody? Any questions? Please, Tim.
Okay. thank you for the presentation. I just had a question in the subsection 21. You know, the references that are being made here, it's cleaning up the language. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, which section are you referring to?
21.3. It says permissible uses. Amend subsection 21.3.2, subparagraph B3.
Is that item 4, correct?
Okay, yeah.
Yes. 3 and 4 on here.
So number 3 was intended to add moderate and achievable as income categories into the local housing program. It's actually referenced earlier in that subsection. It's just not carried through on the subparagraph there.
Okay.
The modification to subsection 21.3.6, which is item number 4, that was intended to distinguish that this subsection, which is related to the accessory residential structures that are not secondary dwellings, that are smaller than that, like a detached bedroom, this refers back to subsection 21.3.2 to determine whether or not a parcel is eligible for a secondary residence. That subsection specifies that a parcel is eligible if it's over an acre.
Okay.
So that's one reference. The second reference we add there is to the area plans, and that's because we have two area plans that have substitute standards. In Placer County, any parcel can qualify for a secondary residence if it's deed restricted. And in the Tahoe Valley area plan, parcels can qualify in a certain neighborhood for secondary dwellings as well.
I appreciate the clarification because being in Incline and Crystal Bay, we are zoned completely differently than that. So I was just concerned, is this going to be superseding what's going on in Incline and Crystal Bay?
It would only be superseding it if a substitute standard was proposed in the area plan that's under development. Based on the drafts that are being proposed, there's no substitute standard being proposed for that area.
You've answered many questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. Any other questions, comments? Jennifer?
Good morning. I have a couple. First, I was pleased to see that you were trying to align the timing of the TMDL work with the fix in item number 7. So I was disappointed to see that it came out in the errata. I was just wondering what, because I kind of, that needs to be addressed, that timing issue between the October request and the actual work that's done later. So I was wondering what the issue was with that putting March in there and what work still needs to be done. And I appreciate they're going to do more work and bring it back because that does still need to be fixed.
Yes, there was some confusion regarding the dates and how things – right now the way it's worded in the package, it effectively carries over a three-year period. So we request a report in October for the prior year, mm-hmm. and then that report would not be provided until the following year. And I didn't know if that was correct when I spoke with our current planning division. There was some confusion there as well. So this is something I'd like to bring, get a meeting together with our current planning division and some of the resource agencies that are involved with that, Lahontan and NDEP, mm-hmm. and see if we can figure out how to align the timing a little bit better in terms of the allocation program. And then carry through the language. But as it's written, the language doesn't preclude providing a report in March. The language states that TRPA shall request a report in October. It doesn't require that the report be submitted in October. So I don't see any major problem with the language at this time, but we are looking to still correct that with the future amendment package.
Okay. Thank you. My second question is about the amendment to the buoy fields, and I appreciate the errata. It seemed like that word was missing, so thanks for putting multiplied back in there. It does state overall that this change is not substantive, and clearly you're trying to clarify awkward language. But I remember that we had quite a bit of explanation as to what parcel boundary projection lines were when we adopted this. So I wasn't sure if there was any opportunity for redefining the lakeshore distance to change the number of buoys that someone might, you know, be eligible for, or just make sure that there isn't that by refining the language, we're not impacting the environmental assessment that was done.
And I would defer to Mr. Marshall in case anything is incorrect in what I'm stating. But my understanding is that this definition is for determining the boundaries of the buoy field area. You'd still have to apply your parcel boundary projection setbacks and the 50-foot spacing between the buoys. And so that would not affect the number of buoys eligible.
Yes, just to kind of add on to Michael's explanation, it's a two-step process. First step is to define the capacity based on the linear lake frontage of the littoral lot multiplied by 300 feet, so you get that rectangle. And then applying the 50-foot spacing grid gives you the number, the absolute highest capacity you can put in there. You still would then have to fit those buoys within your projection line setbacks. Okay. So you may not be able to achieve that maximum amount, but it's the start of what that property might be eligible for.
Okay. Yeah, because some of the projection lines aren't always square. So if you end up with a pie shape, you can't.
Right. So you couldn't fit all those buoys if you just by figuring the capacity of a potential buoy field. And there might be other obstructions or other things that would cause a reduction. Also, the number of units served by the buoy field. So there's a number of things that will affect the second step, which is actually how many buoys you could place within the given restrictions.
That makes sense. Thank you. And my final question is actually now a result of this morning's discussion in the picture about other clarifications with accessory residential living space. Kind of wondering what those are. That kind of looks like a adult playhouse. I mean, are we talking about man caves and she sheds? Or what is an accessory living space? Like tool sheds or places that people can be in, but they don't have a bathroom or a kitchen?
Tool sheds are typically unconditioned space. Accessory living space is typically conditioned space. So it's heated and it's habitable space. But it doesn't rise to the level of being a secondary residence where it could be rented out independently. Term I tend to use with people is it's like a detached bedroom. It's like an addition to the house, but it's not attached to the house.
Interesting. Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification on the TMDL timing as well. I had the same question, and happy to engage with you, Michael, on that a bit. My understanding of the TMDL process is such that, yeah, it does split a year, essentially. So that I think the timing was correct the way that it was worded, but I do think some clarification can help. But I'm glad to hear that the way the code's crafted now provides the flexibility. So I think we're not sort of pigeonholed yet. But yeah, please feel free to reach out if there are questions there. Any other member questions or comments? Seeing none, I'd invite the public to speak, please. Good morning. And if you could state your name for the record, please. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sarah Schmitz, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm here to request that you reject this public hearing item on the basis of the ridiculous environmental checklist stating that there is no impact on anything. There contains no common sense, and it needs to be redone. As it relates to this item A, the technical amendments to Chapter 21, the proposed amendments allowing for the building of a secondary residence on a single parcel. I live in Incline Village, and as all of you know, Washoe County has yet to produce an area plan. I believe they've been working on it for 10 years. Because we don't have an area plan, I'm concerned about this language and that it would be in violation of our neighborhood CC&Rs, and it would violate our zoning regulations. I would really appreciate if there was language put in here to address the concerns of the communities that don't have area plans. I'm appalled with the environmental checklist pertaining to this agenda item, as it states there are no impacts. How can a new structure on a property intended to house additional people have no impact on soil, air, fire, parking, public services, energy use, etc.? The list goes on. The environmental checklist is completely void of any mitigation. This needs to be reworked before you approve it. In Chapter 50, specifically 50.5, found on page 11 of your packet, it lists deductions for housing allocations based on water clarity. I feel TRPA has completely missed the issue of microplastics that are now polluting our lake and our drinking water. All references to water clarity should be replaced with the words water purity. Our water is polluted with materials that don't necessarily impact clarity, and TRPA is turning a blind eye on the issue. TRPA needs to step up and take a leadership role in protecting the purity of our lake. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jim Nallen. I'm a 30-plus year resident of Incline Village, and what I've been witnessing the last couple of years is appalling is too easy a word, but I see two major problems. That one of them is with TRPA. The original premise for forming TRPA was to protect the lake and protect the basin. And that seems to have been tossed out for the, may I say, love of money. It seems like anything that brings in more warm bodies to the basin is approved and encouraged. This is what we're seeing on the STRs. Last couple of years especially, and maybe it's just up in my end of the lake, but the numbers of people, the traffic, the trash, just the whole burden on the area has increased dramatically. The other problem is one that may be just my county, Washoe County, but it seems like the CC&Rs that are signed by everyone that buys a property there have been totally ignored. Each neighborhood has its own, but Let me read you a common cause clause that has been in these since the inception.
Sir, yes. before you go on, do you, the agenda item that we're considering are the technical amendments to the regional plan as have been prepared. Do you have specific comments related to these technical amendments? We are going to be hearing an item regarding the performance review system and short-term rentals after this. Are your comments related to this agenda item or the following?
They're related to the short-term rentals.
Okay.
So I'll just come back then?
Yeah, if you don't mind, okay. I think it would probably be best. I appreciate your time and thank you.
Not trying to
cut you off, but I appreciate
that. I do hope that TRPA will reevaluate how they're handling their reason for being.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other members of the public who'd like to speak on this agenda item? Again, we're hearing some technical amendments to the Code of Ordinances. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Diane Hirschberg, and I live in Incline Village. And I had a comment with respect to 21.32A2. I just had a proposal to add three words at the end. There's a restriction here. It says accessory use is restricted to affordable, moderate, or achievable housing, which I strongly support. And I would also like to say, and it cannot be used as a vacation or short-term rental. And I think that the intent of this is to bring in affordable housing, but they only have to rent it for 10 months of the year, and I worry that during the other 2 months it could be used as a short-term rental or a vacation rental. And that's my comment.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Anyone else from the public have comments on this agenda item? Excellent. Thank you, Chris. Bringing it back to the APC, any members have any other comments, or does staff have any responses or comments to anything that we've heard this morning?
Let's see. This is Michael Conger representing TRPA. Just to start with the one of the comments was about the validity of the IEC of the initial environmental checklist. Mm-hmm. Under TRPA code. Additional discussion is only required if no with mitigation or yes is checked. If no is checked, then no further discussion is necessary. So my understanding is that that is totally valid. I would defer to Mr. Marshall for any further comments on that, though.
I think if you could click off your light because we get kicked off. The key issue there is there is no change that is being wrought by the additional clarification or correction. When you're comparing the existing language with the proposed language, there's not going to be an impact associated with that. It's just clarifying where you go to determine whether or not there's an allowable secondary residence in order for you to determine whether or not this is an accessory space as opposed to another dwelling unit. And that in and of itself does not cause any significant impacts associated with that language change. And that's the focus of the IEC. It's not on whether or not secondary units are allowed or not. That's other documents that decide that, either an area plan or a zone change within the plan area statement.
Another point I wanted to make was that,
John, just to follow up on that, too.
It's on.
Also, so this item is not the item, just kind of in response to the questions, too. This is not the item to take up any substantive changes. This is for technical changes that aren't changing any substance to the code, and any recommendations for substantive amendments, as maybe suggested, would need to be taken up as another item separately, right?
Correct.
Tim.
That was the follow-up question I had. So just for complete clarity and to beat this dead horse, this is strictly for technical changes. Per the comment that Ms. Schmitz made earlier about the environmental impact, when I first read through that, I was like, an incline in Crystal Bay, there are many impacts doing anything up there, and that goes for anywhere else in the lake. But that has been addressed in the initial environmental impact study that you are referencing. Is that correct? for each of the communities?
That's a yes and no answer to that, but let me explain. The technical changes that we're proposing here are such they don't change the actual effect of the code. And that's, I think, what Mr. Plemmel was getting at. They just clarify the application. So no secondary units will be allowed in any place where they're not currently allowed as a result of this action. It just clarifies where you go to determine whether or not accessory space is permitted, and then how you calculate it. And that's how the clarification that's being made. So there was not any jurisdiction by jurisdiction analysis because the actual code change itself does not result in any change on the ground in any jurisdiction different than what's already in place.
Thank you very much. Jennifer?
Oh, just to follow on that thread to address the concern that we're hearing, would be a separate action that someone could petition the TRPA to address, where if someone desired to have certain prohibitions from these units being allowed in their local jurisdiction, that's either a local issue or it's potentially a clarification to the code that would make certain prohibitions, but then that would be a substantive change that we would have to hear at a later date.
Correct. And let's just be clear, secondary units are only allowed currently on parcels that are greater than 1 acre or an acre or greater, so that's the way the existing regulation is, or a local jurisdiction can adopt an area plan that changes that and allows them in specific instances. And that would be the function of the area plan, which is first brought forward by a local jurisdiction, and then obviously to this body, and then to the governing board.
Excellent. Michael, do you have anything else to add? Sorry, I cut you off earlier.
No, what I had to add was already said.
Okay, so. Excellent. I guess one last question, John, that was brought up again is, I guess, the potential use of these secondary structures for short-term rentals. Again, I appreciate that it sounds like, given that they are limited to parcels of an acre or greater or an area plan that allows it, it sounds like that is a relatively small case that may be considered, but is there anything to add on that point?
I think the request was to add to the deed-restricted affordable, moderate, or achievable housing in Section 21.3.2A.2 on page 8, not having to do with accessory dwelling units, but just confirming that these affordable, moderate, or achievable housing units, that the secondary unit that are allowed under this program, because you're using a bonus unit, can't be used for STRs or vacation rental use. And so these are, the deed restriction requires that they be, that the rent be set at a specific level. And so this may be something that we may want to look at, but unfortunately we're not noticed for a change to this section. So we can't do that at this time, but it may be something we want to make certain, because I know there's a strong interest that bonus units are not used as vacation rental. And I believe that in the Placer Town Center, or in the Placer County Area Plan, there may be language to that effect, but I'm not absolutely positive, because I think we addressed that issue when we discussed there and passed their area plan, but I'd have to go back and check that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Hillary?
Yeah, I was just wondering, Mr. Marshall, is it addressed in number 3 in that same section where it talks about adequately funded staffed compliance monitoring program, talks about the deed restriction, and then goes on to say secondary units approved under this program shall be made available for long-term occupancy and shall be occupied for at least 10 months in each calendar year. Obviously, if there's some other local restriction that would apply, it seems to me that this section already addresses where second units are using bonus, secondary units are using bonus units, that there would be a deed restriction requiring them to be used for long-term occupancy. I think what it doesn't cover is where there's a secondary unit that may be using a non-deed restricted residential unit of use, unless there's a local regulation that prohibits that from being used as a vacation rental.
Right. I would agree with that. The other thing I want to clarify is, because there's been a couple comments so far on CC&Rs, is that CC&Rs are, those covenant and deed restrictions on a particular set development, and that if there's something that's more restrictive than TRPA ordinances or local ordinances, then those control. Our rules do not displace CC&Rs related to use of units. So I just want to make certain that that's clear as well.
And just to build on that, John, it's not the role of TRPA to essentially enforce any of the local or CC&R requirements that could be more restrictive than TRPA requirements.
Correct. That would be up to the residents and to the HOA if there is one.
Any other comments or discussion? This has been a really good overview, I think, and has brought a lot of issues to light. I appreciate, Michael, the effort that went into these technical amendments and some of the questions that have been raised. With that, I'd be happy to entertain a motion to approve these. We have two motions that need to be made this morning, and again, happy to entertain a motion to get this moving forward.
I move to recommend approval of the required findings as described in Attachment C, including a finding of no significant effect for adoption of the code of ordinance amendments as described in the staff summary for these technical corrections, and including the changes on the errata sheet provided by staff before the meeting.
Any second? Excellent. Moved by Lee, seconded by Garth. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, that motion passes. A second motion?
Go ahead.
Thank you.
I move to recommend adoption of the ordinance amending Ordinance 87-9 as previously amended to amend the Code of Ordinance as shown in Attachment A.
Could you tack on the errata to that?
Including the errata sheet provided by staff.
Second that.
Excellent. Moved by Lee, seconded by Mr. Gavon. All in favor, please signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you again. Good discussion, and I appreciate it. Moving on to item 5, number B. It's an amendment to the performance review system, and I believe Mr. Hester will be introducing this item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While Brandy's setting up, I want to give a little bit of introduction to this, because some of you haven't been involved in the local government and housing committee has had 4 meetings on this. Some of them rather lengthy. So I want to explain what this amendment is and what it is not and why it relates to the regional plan. So currently, when we allocate residential units every 2 years, it's based on 2 criteria. One is the audit of permit activity to make sure that the local governments are permitting per their memoranda of understanding. And the second is that local governments are implementing the TMDL provisions with either NDEP or Lahontan. The proposal here that came from the Local Government and Housing Committee was to change the code on that particular process to add a third criterion, which is, does the local government have a short-term rental neighborhood compatibility program. So it adds, it's basically one paragraph. Brandy will go through that, but it adds that as a third criterion. If you don't have it, you can lose points and lose some allocations. We are not proposing a ban on short-term rentals, and we're not identifying what the short-term rental neighborhood compatibility regulation should be for any particular jurisdiction. We realize that it's not the same in every jurisdiction. One size doesn't fit all. We, I think, learned that lesson on several other provisions over the years. So it's setting up a context for local governments to do that. And why are we interested in what is it that we're proposing here is the criterion will have three components. One is operation, which is things like, do you have operational requirements for trash, hours of operation, things like that. The second is enforcement. Do you have a program to enforce if those things are not being done? And the third, which is really why TRPA is most interested in this, is locational criteria. And there's a part of the staff report package includes a discussion, but for those of you who remember the 2012 regional plan update, one of the concepts there was that we wanted to redevelop older development in town centers that didn't meet current environmental regulations. And one of the ways that the regional plan looks to do that is redirect development and redevelopment into town centers. The reason we wanted to do that is because concentrating mixed uses near where people, mixed uses and walkable and bikeable areas reduces vehicle miles traveled, or the vehicle miles traveled don't increase as much. Our compact mandate is to reduce reliance on the private auto. So that's why location is important and added as a third part of that criterion. And I think with that, that's enough of an introduction. I want to let me check my notes to make sure I didn't miss anything. A couple other points. As I mentioned, one size doesn't fit all, so the criteria listed in the guideline document are broad. They give you examples of what you can use. Those programs will be evaluated as they come forward. As I mentioned, we had four working group meetings. Some of you participated in that. And after today, it will go from your recommendation, will go to the Regional Plan Implementation Committee later this month, and then either later this month or next month it will go to the full governing board. Again, back to what we are asking of this commission today is to look at the code amendment and make a recommendation on that. It's very limited in scope. I know you'll hear a lot of comments about short-term rentals in general, but wanted to help the commission stay focused on what is before you.
Thank you for the introduction, and I do appreciate that context. I think it is important for us all to remember that this isn't this code amendment essentially links the short-term compliance question to the distribution of residential allocations. We're not entertaining a question of whether there should or should not be short-term rentals or how short-term rentals should be in any way managed. That is not what this technical amendment looks like. It is essentially, again, linking a requirement for local government to have some degree of management and of what those short-term rentals look like, and linking that to the residential allocation process. It is then on local government to essentially make those decisions in terms of how that is actually implemented. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Brandy for the staff presentation.
Great, thank you. My name is Brandy McMahon. I'm the local government coordinator for the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. So for some background, this past April, the Local Government and Housing Committee, which is a committee of the TRPA Governing Board, prior to the distribution of the 2019 and 2020 residential allocations, agreed to develop a code amendment and guidelines to make short-term rental neighborhood compatibility a third criterion of the performance review system for the distribution of residential allocations to the local jurisdictions by the end of this year. So as a first step, the committee approved a work program, which included the formation of a working group, process, and schedule. And to ensure stakeholder and public interest was represented and considered throughout the process, the working group included the members of the Local Government and Housing Committee, representatives from neighborhood and environmental groups, the real estate industry, and building industry. And so today in the audience from the working group, we have a number of members, we have Heather Lunsford. She was on the working group representing the Nevada Realtors. Sharon Kerrigan, she represented the California Realtors. Pat Davidson and then Mark Salmon both participated and represented the building industry. And then we have Janet McDougall, a resident of El Dorado County, that represented the neighborhood groups. These are also public meetings, and so we had a significant amount of public participation throughout the process. So the working group, they started by developing a menu of locational, operational, and enforcement best management practices for managing short-term rentals. And then they also developed an updated report on local government activities related to short-term rentals in the Lake Tahoe Basin, which covers current conditions. A website was also developed. It includes information on the working group and links to local jurisdiction short-term rental programs, and it includes all of the public comment we have received to date on this item, including the public comments submitted for consideration by the Advisory Planning Commission today. So as John mentioned earlier, the proposal that came from the working group was to update the performance review system for the distribution of residential allocations to the local jurisdiction. And currently, the performance review system is based on two criterion. That's total maximum daily load implementation and then residential audit performance. And this past September, the working group voted unanimously to recommend the addition of short-term rental neighborhood compatibility as a third criterion. So just like the existing code language for demonstrating compliance with a total maximum daily load implementation and residential audit performance, the proposed code language requires that a local jurisdiction receive a score of 90% or greater based on short-term rental neighborhood compatibility guidelines to receive their full allotment of residential allocations. And so the direction we received from the working group when developing the guidelines was to incorporate a menu of best management practices, provide local flexibility, include locational, operational, and enforcement criteria, and then include numerical values for scoring purposes. At the meetings, there was concern raised from the locals with particularly addressing the location criteria. But as John mentioned earlier, a core principle of our regional plan is to direct development and uses towards compact mixed-use town centers and public transit and bike and pedestrian amenities. And so the location criteria was maintained and ultimately endorsed by the working group. In order to assist the local jurisdictions in developing their location criteria, TRPA has developed an online short-term rental interactive map for the Tahoe region. And we also did some analysis based on existing short-term rentals. And what we found is that there's approximately 6,500 short-term rentals in the Tahoe region. Approximately 6% are within town centers. Approximately 22% are either within a town center or a quarter mile of a town center. And a quarter mile is considered walking distance. Around 31% are within a quarter mile of a transit stop. 60% are within a quarter mile of a major highway. And the vast majority, 90% of existing short-term rentals are within the residential regional land use district. So at the last working group meeting in September, the working group recommended some additional best management practices be included, including locating short-term rentals near recreation and bike and pedestrian amenities. And so we did some additional analysis, and we sent a memo to the APC members yesterday, and there are copies available at the back. But what we found is that approximately 4% of existing short-term rentals are within a quarter of a mile of a ski resort or a golf course. Around 1% are within a quarter mile of a major trailhead, and we define that as trailheads with a parking lot. Almost 50% are within a quarter mile of a recreation site, and almost 70% are within a quarter mile of an existing or proposed shared use path, bike lane, or bike route. So ultimately, what you'll see in the proposed guidelines is, in order for a local jurisdiction to receive 30 points under the location category, they need to demonstrate that they are directing short-term rentals towards town centers and transportation amenities such as public transit. To receive 30 points under operation, local jurisdictions need to develop a program that addresses noise, occupancy, parking, refuse, defensible space, water quality, public health and safety, and education. And then to receive 40 points, local jurisdictions need to have an enforcement program in place. So with that, I'd like to thank all the members of the working group and public that participated in this process. And I'd like to recommend approval of the code amendment and guidelines. Oh, I'd like to recommend that the APC, if you choose to recommend approval of the code amendment and guidelines to the governing board, make the motions in the staff report. And I am available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Brandy. First, APC member comments, questions? Tim.
Thank you for the presentation, Brandy, and thank you for the acknowledgement. Concern I have, and again, this is for Incline Village in Crystal Bay in Washoe County, the locational strategy for the density of a town center and things of that nature. If anyone's driven through Incline and Crystal Bay lately, we have no town center per se. It's a strip, and as far as what would be available to turn into short-term rentals, would be very difficult. As our own county commissioner had said, that Incline and Crystal Bay are pretty much maxed out on the amount of future allocations. So I don't necessarily know how this would all fit into that with potential, you know, based on allocations, since we've pretty much built out Incline and Crystal Bay. But I think more important is that we don't even have our area plan adopted yet for Incline and Crystal Bay. And I think that while this is a good, you know, step in moving forward, as far as Incline and Crystal Bay / Washoe County are concerned, I think that we would like to have our area plan in place before moving forward to adopt this. It's almost, for us anyway, it's kind of like the cart before the horse. This is the feedback that I've been getting from folks in our community. And so as it stands, I think this is premature for Washoe County to move forward on. But I do appreciate the work that's been done. And hopefully we'll be getting something from our county within the next couple weeks. And I would say after we get our area plan, then how that dovetails into this with the stipulations that have been worked out by the operational group that you were in charge of, I would be more ready to address it at that point. But again, I think that with how this stands now for Washoe County, I would not be able to support moving forward on this. Thank you.
Appreciate your comments. Anybody else like to speak today? Please, Lewis, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. For Douglas County, and this is Lewis Cariola, I think we're looking at a very similar situation as stated by Mr. Calligrate in Washoe County. The tourist core in Douglas County is focused at Lower Kingsbury and the Casino Corridor. Not much opportunity for locational criteria to be met by residential zoning and development. Additionally, I believe a regional approach, which is what TRPA is mandated to do, I understand that, does make it difficult to find a one-size-fits-all suggestion for regulation when some of the jurisdictions are already fully operational and permitting and working through an enforcement structure already. So Douglas County has a permitting program. Douglas County has a fine structure. Douglas County has online renewal. We've already implemented a fully fleshed out program, and I understand Placer County and Washoe County still are working through that. But to take this punitive approach against Douglas County, I think, is not necessarily fair. The truth is, I don't see how Douglas County will ever meet the locational criteria just in the way we're laid out. That being said, I would have to echo Mr. Calicrate's comments and not be able to support this at this time.
Thank you, Lewis. I appreciate both your and Tim's comments regarding the locational standards. I had some questions myself regarding the locational standards, and in chatting with TRPA staff and diving deeper into this, I was directed to the degree of flexibility that has been built into the locational standards. So I know there's the easy talking point here is located within a quarter mile of town centers, but that is not an absolute, and that there are a variety of different other mechanisms to meet that locational standard that can still get the necessary points. And certainly correct me if I'm wrong, Brandy, on this, but just want to, again, appreciating the comments, but want to raise that point that the locational standards as developed were created with a degree of flexibility to explicitly address that concern. There are a variety of local government folks who participated in the working group, I think, who had the same concern, which I think is valid. And again, that was a question I had with respect to some of these jurisdictions that might be challenged meeting those locational standards, how that could be done. And in reading through the material and looking more closely, I guess I have a degree of confidence that there's flexibility there, but again, appreciate your perspective on that. Please.
Thank you. Just as a follow-up, and this might be more directed to TRPA staff and Mr. Marshall, allocations for 2021, 2022 would presumably be the first eligible for this new locational criterion, presuming that's the case.
Correct.
Okay. So in Douglas County, we're still on our books, we're still holding our full allocations from 2015, 16, 17, 18, now 19. Those are 10 a year. Like Incline Village and Crystal Bay, I don't know that we ever even have the capacity to further be issuing those residential allocations within the Tahoe Basin. This might actually be the way that I can rectify approving any suggested motion because, and not to be glib, but I don't think it's going to matter in Douglas County if we never actually use those allocations. And if I'm incorrect in that, please correct me because, as a member representing Douglas County, I want to make sure this is advanced forward to our commissioners when they do ask staff questions about the implications here. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Liz.
Let me...
yeah, please.
I think John. This will answer both of your questions. If you look on page 83 on the fold-out of the criteria, and you look at, you'll notice the heading on every one of these are example. They're not required. But if you look under at the last one right above operational, it says exactly what Douglas County and Washoe County are doing, which is you create a working group to develop policies and programs for locations of STRs within your jurisdiction as long as it's consistent with the regional plan. So we are not telling you that you have to do it exactly quarter mile or this or that. What the town centers refers to in Incline Village is the town centers adopted in the regional plan. So I think what we're trying to tell you is you need to develop a program if you want to get those allocations. If you, in fact, have allocations left over and you think that the penalty will not cause you to do that, then that's fine. But I think what I've heard from both of your jurisdictions at the Local Government and Housing Committee is you want to do this, and we're saying we want you to do this. So if there's a misunderstanding that you have to adopt these particular examples in here, that's why we call them examples, because we wanted to be clear. We want you to develop your neighborhood compatibility program. And I know Kelly Mullen's working on that from the Washoe County, and I know Wes, and I don't know who else is working on your group in Douglas County. So I think we're consistent with what you're saying, to be honest with you. I don't know if you want to add to that, Brandon.
Thank you, John. Steve.
I just wanted to kind of echo our esteemed chair's position on the flexibility. I think for Placer County, that was really one of the things that allowed us some comfort in what staff's presenting, and we wanted to thank staff for incorporating a number of the changes that the working group had suggested into this recommendation. As Mr. Hester had indicated, the different jurisdictions are very, very different. So I think the flexibility that's brought forward within the matrix, allowing us to kind of pick and choose which items will satisfy the needs of each individual jurisdiction for SDRs, will be very helpful in that. So, lastly, just want to thank you for the website. All the information contained on that really helped to provide a lot of information to review in advance of this meeting. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Steve. Jennifer. Sorry. Jennifer, yeah, then Lee, then Hillary. Thank you.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could go back to the slide that had the various point systems on it. I think it was just like one or that one right there. I guess two things. One, from what I've heard, is unfortunately, at least in a couple of communities, we're hearing this morning that this won't necessarily create the incentive that it's intended to do, which is kind of a downside. But even with that being said, I'm wondering how the Performance Review Committee will actually determine these points and function within the guidelines that are provided. So if staff could sort of describe how they envision that happening, that would be helpful, because the package on page 62 says, prior to applying the performance review system, the agency anticipates giving local jurisdictions an opportunity to provide a written response as to how they're managing. So I'm wondering, you know, who's going to apply the points? If you anticipate giving them an opportunity to respond, that's great, but does that give them the certainty that they may need to refute any findings that the entity applying the points has made these determinations? How will this functionally be managed every 2 years? Because there are good concepts in here, but when the rubber hits the road, you know, 2 years from now or whenever this occurs next, are you going to end up with too much ambiguity and have sort of a snarl as to how to actually apply these points? So I'm interested in how you're actually thinking you're going to do that.
All right. So every 2 years before the governing board considers the distribution of the residential allocation, TRPA puts together a staff report with our findings regarding jurisdictions and, you know, if they, you know, how they're doing on implementing the Lake Tahoe total maximum daily load, and then their residential audit scores. And we actually share that information with local jurisdiction staff before we make it public. And then we also convene a performance review committee, and that's staff members from all the local jurisdictions and TRPA, and then we review the findings at that meeting. And that's a public meeting, and so there's ample opportunity throughout the current process for local jurisdictions to weigh in. So the thought process with the proposed guidelines is we would send those to the local jurisdictions, and we would ask them to provide a written response with regards to how they're meeting the location operational enforcement criteria. We could rank that. We could work with them if there was any, you know, disagreement on how that was applied by staff. And, you know, it will go to the Performance Review Committee and then ultimately to the Advisory Planning Commission and Governing Board.
So there is a point where if folks that I anticipate will still hear from this morning feel that the local jurisdiction's not handling noise or parking or refuse or those sorts of things, that there's an opportunity for additional engagement where people can have that kind of discussion or debate as to how many points should really be assigned to any one of these items when
yes.
it comes to the implementation phase.
Okay. Yeah. There'll be up to 3 public meetings where it's discussed.
Okay, thanks.
Ellery, did you want to weigh in on this? Is it related or different?
Yeah. No, I think that Jennifer's follow-up question addressed my question. Thank you.
Excellent. Lee?
Okay, so I'm representing Carson City, who doesn't have a dog in this fight. I just have questions as a planner, so let me try to figure out how to get there. So based on this discussion, and I've heard the points, I'm wondering if locational, you know, why it's weighted roughly equally to the other things, because I think some of the comments with the counties now and the public is the problems are with enforcement and operation. As a planner, too, usually I'm not sure of the link between the location of a program that manages short-term rentals versus I think location is important when making allocations. You want the unit to be put in these areas that promote these things to start with. But once they're there, I'm not sure. Usually it's not really as important who's living there. If it's somebody that's there now or, you know, all year or part of the year, it's a unit, it's in that location, and now you're managing who's there. I'm not really sure the importance of that. So what was the discussion? That discussion around to the question, was there any discussion about the weighting of that and why, you know, of that nexus of location of a program for short-term rentals versus an allocation in general going to the county? Does that mean?
Yes, there was a discussion. Everybody agreed on the working group that enforcement should have more points. There was mixed positions on location. Some felt very strongly that was the real reason TRPA was involved, because operational and enforcement are things locals should do anyway. The location, relative to how it implements the regional land use plan, some felt that was very important. Some thought it should be dropped, so we left the points for that right where it was. So there was pretty robust discussion about it.
Thank you, John. And can I just clarify, my understanding of the locational requirements is that they don't necessarily apply to the location of existing STRs. That is essentially part of the compatibility plan for permitting new STRs and incentivizing those approvals or those new STRs to consider these locational requirements. Is that correct?
It would be let's say Carson City was doing some, since that's totally hypothetical. We would say, okay, what is your short-term rental neighborhood compatibility program? And Lee, you would say, well, we have noise, occupancy, parking, refuse, defensible space, water quality, public health requirements. So we get all those 30 points. We have an enforcement program that has all those criteria, so we get 40 points. We don't care where they put them, so we're not going to get those 30 points. Or you could say, yeah, we looked at your example criteria and we decided we wanted to put them at the Carson City Town Center, which is all wholly located at Thunderbird Lodge or something like that. So anytime we do an STR, it's there. That's where we permit it. And we go, great, you got those 30 points too. So I know that's a little bit hypothetical, but it's every time you permit one. So over time, you would cycle through the existing ones.
And it's based on having a program in place that says all those things.
And what locational criteria you decide at your local government level you want to include. So to make it more real, if Incline Village, they, as Kelly Mullen works through that program, they're going to come up with something that they'll say, these are the criteria, this is our enforcement and operational program, this is where we want to locate these. And so that's what we want to see get put in place. But we don't want to dictate one size fits all for the whole basin. So I hope that clarified more than confused.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. Hillary, and then it looks like Eric and probably Bruce. Nope. Oh, no. Sorry. Hillary. Oh, Kevin and Liz.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments of the other commissioners, the broader concerns with the program, and look forward to public input and more discussion on that. I wanted to take the opportunity to ask just a more technical question, since I have the chance. It's related to the water quality best practices criteria listed under the operational category. There are a lot of things in the TRPA code that trigger a property to come into compliance with their BMP requirements and mitigate their excess coverage. Most of those are related to some physical change to the property or change to the coverage on the property. So I was wondering what the justification was. Oh, and I'll add to that, outside of that, there is very little, if any, enforcement of the BMP requirements on properties where they are not doing one of those things that triggers a permit and compliance with BMPs. So what is the justification for what appears to be kind of pushing the responsibility for enforcement on properties, whether they're single-family homes or properties in town centers or commercial areas, pushing the BMP and excess mitigation coverage compliance into this particular program related to vacation rentals where there may not be a physical change to the property?
I'm going to jump in on that one. First, I do want to take a bit of exception with your statement that there's no enforcement. TRPA has a separate unit that is in charge with getting BMPs in place on a range of different properties, and we focus that program on the most bang for the buck, which is usually it's going to be either larger sites, commercial or multifamily sites. So that's where we tend to focus first, and we get a lot of, you are correct, we get a lot of compliance through permitting actions. And that's what, you know, essentially a corresponding action from local governments would be a licensor action or a, you know, a permit of some kind for STRs. And so that's really, for both of these, that's an opportunity for the local jurisdiction to show increases in water quality best management practices. So we really see this as just an extension of the kind of, when there is an interaction with a regulatory agency, part of that is, you know, you got to bring your property up to snuff. And so whether it's being an addition or a change of use, which would requires a TRPA permit, then you need to do those programs. So I see that as an extension and a way in which the local jurisdiction can help water quality improvements through both of these programs.
So if a local jurisdiction's program doesn't involve a permit related to a physical change or a change of use, if it's a vacation rental permit, or my understanding is in some jurisdictions it's just a business license, is what this saying, is this requiring that local jurisdiction to require compliance with BMPs as part of that process, even if it's not associated with any kind of permit? TRPA permit?
If you want the 2.5 points, yes.
Excellent. Thank you. Eric?
I'll be brief with my comments, but obviously working with Douglas County and on that committee, and a lot of work's being done. So even though the carrots more are our driving force here, is because we're trying to work towards this versus the stick, because we have plenty of allocations out there. So, but my point here is more specifically is the public safety and health is only 5 points. And I've always had contention with that, and I just want to put that on record, because as a fire representative, I think that there's a lot of environmental impact and a lot of things that come to that, and it's putting in a nuisance category, kind of, with parking and noise. And safety's got, although it is the maximum points in that category, I just think that there should be more weight to the safety of these occupancies. So that's my only comment. Otherwise, looks good.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add,
please
amend my answer to Hillary. There's also an opportunity to provide TRPA with an alternative mechanism that accomplishes those objectives, improvements in water quality. And so it's not just those two. So I think I was a little too terse in my requirement that it be those two.
Thank you for the clarification. I do think it's important to remember, again, when I read the words, the water quality or other factors that are considered are examples that have been put out there. And there's generally a caveat at the end of them that essentially provides for any other type of thing that might actually meet this sort of need. So, the flexibility is there, but I do appreciate the question. And Eric, appreciate your public safety perspective. So thank you for that. Kevin, I think, was...
Overall, I appreciate the direction we're going. I think a point system is nice and clean, and it's always going to be difficult to agree on how it's weighted, and I think the conversations today have been already useful. If we're going to go to the trouble of updating TRPA code in the way residential allocations are done to incentivize and kind of use a carrot and a stick to get jurisdictions to manage short-term rentals, I think it would be short-sighted to not consider some affordable housing component in the guidelines. I realize this is a bit of a leap, but it's also sort of the elephant in the room. It's a flip side of this, the problem that one of the major problems that STRs are creating in the basin. We have a ton of TOT dollars sitting around and jurisdictions dragging their feet to actually get housing done, affordable housing, workforce housing. And if we're looking at the economic sustainability of this region, I think I'd like to see some criteria in there for actually moving forward with affordable housing, not just banking dollars and talking about it. So I'm curious if that came up in any working group meetings. I realize it's a bit of a curveball here, but actually, it's an important part of it.
Actually, it's not a curveball. The committee changed their name from Local Government Committee to Local Government and Housing Committee because they want to address housing. And what the discussion was around short-term rentals is they're really a subset of second homes, absentee owners, whatever you want to call that. Placer County, I think, is at 70%. I don't remember the percentages for the other jurisdictions, but they want to look at opening up some of those second homes for rentals, not short-term rentals necessarily, but longer-term rentals for workforce and stuff. So there's actually, I can't remember the name of it, there's actually a group that's trying to, it's Tahoe, do you remember the name, Karen's group? There's a group on... Well, there's a couple of them that are working on freeing up second homes for long-term rental, and so that's a program we'll probably be talking about going forward, because November is when the committee wants to get into housing. But the short-term rentals, I think, are like 12% or something of the housing stock. Second homes are over 50. So their thinking is we tackle the 50, which will include short-term rentals. So that item will be addressed. That answers your question,
Kevin. I think if I could add on to that, there was a kind of a real agreement that they would divorce the two and do the STR program and get it out of the way. So quite honestly, they could really tackle the housing issue, and that's where a lot of the local government concern and quite honestly, a lot of the other committee members and the working group members were looking towards the housing fix to address just your points, but not to link the two, because there may be greater solutions, or that was just as a matter of how they were going to take the issues up. There is somewhat of a time crunch to get the STR guidelines done, because we will be working into the next allocation schedule, and there was some real concern that they wanted to give jurisdictions enough time to address their neighborhood compatibility programs to, you know, hit all these points, or as many as they could, in time for the next allocation process. And I think there was a fear that if they took on the housing element as well, it was just going to bog down, because that's a significantly larger issue than just STRs and the impact on STRs.
Thank you. Are there any other? Yeah, Ellery, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have three questions, if that's okay. Okay. The first question is, as Jennifer mentioned, it seems that there is kind of variability in terms of the strength of the incentive. And so I was wondering if the working group had considered other types of incentive structures before they landed on this one.
They did not. The direction from the governing board was to update the performance review system with a third criterion and get it to them by the end of the year so that we focused on that task throughout the process. But with regards to the guidelines, what was interesting is like they wanted, the working group wanted to build in local flexibility, but also have, you know, a numerical scoring system. And so it does create a bit of ambiguity. Like it's not, it gives them the flexibility, but we are going to have to evaluate. And I think that's where the tension is, because if we were to dictate how to get the points, then they would, then locals wouldn't have the ability to develop programs tailored to their unique circumstances. So agreed. I wanted to add that.
Great. Thank you. Second question. So I noticed in on page 79 of our packet where the code amendment is proposed, you see the blue line there for item number 4, but if you continue down that page to item F, monitoring requirement, it says that TRPA will be collecting a monitoring fee. And that the fee will be used to monitor water quality impacts and permit conformance in accordance with the rules of procedure. And I was just curious to know if this item, this code, section of code, should be expanded to include this new short-term rental neighborhood compatibility program.
We did not discuss that at the working group meeting, but currently we do collect, I want to say it's around $130 for each allocation issued for this under this code section. So, but we did not discuss that, and we're not recommending that
okay.
at this time.
I think to a large extent we wanted that to be a local government obligation, since they're the kind of closest, they're going to have unique, we think, unique, different elements of their program, and that as you see, part of the enforcement provision is that implementation and funding and penalties program. The amount of money generated by the fee on under F is really not adequate to take on that, quite honestly, to take on that task.
Thank you. A third question is, I understand that that this proposal really ties the residential allocation to a local jurisdiction's program for neighborhood compatibility. I'm wondering if there's any thought towards the evaluation of those programs once they're implemented or as they are implemented. For example, you provided us with really great statistics on location analysis. I noticed that a number of those percentages are low. Will there be any kind of evaluation or monitoring to see if, as a result of these programs, those percentages move up, or if there are any other outcomes that we desire if those are going to be monitored?
Yeah, so we will be able to report on that information in the future. So our research and analysis division, they reached out to the local jurisdictions, and they got location information based on permits or TOT certificates, and that's what's reflected in that online interactive map and what we used to develop the analysis that we provided in the staff report. And so the locals have agreed to share that information with us on an as-needed basis, so we can get that in the future and update it and report on various trends with short-term rentals.
I would, Ellery, I'd also add to that that every 2 years there's the performance, basically, audits and that go into whether or not all these elements have been met. If a jurisdiction has said, well, our enforcement program is this, and it's going to be effective because of X, Y, and Z, and it turns out that they can't establish it in year 3-4, then that might be something that not only this APC, but staff and governing board would take into account in determining whether or not the program is actually adequate and is achieving the goals of each of those sections.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellery. Anybody else? I want to thank everybody for... Oh, sorry, Jennifer. Yeah.
Thank you. I think I need just a little bit more information before we move into the public comment area so that I can put some of the comments we're going to hear into the right frame of mind for me, because I'm still learning about everything TRPA does and where jurisdiction stops and starts. We have already received a tremendous amount of public comment that was provided to us in advance by, you know, emails and other letters that have been written. Some of the suggestions that we've already seen pertain to the fact that this is not necessarily going to have the intended effect, which we've also heard about this morning. It's the horse has already left the barn discussion, because these short-term rentals already exist and there are already issues in various communities. The impact is already in effect, and I totally appreciate that this is an attempt to sort of reverse some of those impacts and get these communities using better practices to improve the community and the environment. So I think that's a good thing. But there are suggestions about it not being quite as loose, you know, instead of being a guideline that's optional or a best management practice, what can be incorporated into something more strict or enforceable, and suggesting that things be put into the TRPA code of the permitting process. So my actual question with all that swirling in my mind is trying to figure out what permitting processes TRPA has in their arsenal that could actually come to bear on any of the issues that I know we're going to hear about. Because business licenses are a local thing. Special use permits are a local thing. Building is a TRPA thing. So if folks aren't building, is there any other permitting process that TRPA has that might have an effect on this arena? Does that make sense?
Okay. I think there's a couple touch points, but remember that what the Governing Board's prior action in 2004 did was essentially make vacation rentals a part of the residential use. So once you have an existing residence and you don't need to come to TRPA to essentially rent your house short term for a vacation rental or an STR or VHR use, that's part of your defined use of your residential use. But there are a couple touch points. One is a new construction, and the other is the allocation of the awarding of the allocations that is essentially done by local jurisdictions to, you know, either by lottery or whatever the way that that's done. Those issues were discussed by the governing board, and essentially the direction was to look just at the touch point of awarding allocations from TRPA to local jurisdictions. And that was kind of the place in which the governing board focused as to where this linkage should be drawn. Now, I will say that there are interests on the board to discuss the issue of whether or not these allocations, once they're given out, should be used for anything but
pure residential use, not vacation rentals. But that's going to be an issue for the board to take on and discuss should they want to do that. That was not part of their direction for this program.
Thank you. So I am still very interested in hearing, obviously, what the public has to say in addition to what we've already heard. But that's very helpful because it feels like this is a step in the right direction, but clearly it's not completely satisfying because it doesn't address all aspects of this issue. It's one piece of the issue.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you both for teeing up, I guess, my comments on this topic. In my brief time here, I've come to respect and appreciate the critically important and nuanced relationship between local government and TRPA. TRPA, again, providing regional oversight, local government really being the one responsible for these type of issues. And SDR compatibility is clearly a lightning rod. And I look forward, as Jennifer said, to hearing from the public on this today. We know that this is an issue. And in my mind, that intersection between local government and TRPA, as John just highlighted, between where allocations and are issued, and TRPA does have some discussion with local government in terms of how it develops moving forward, is a logical place for initiating this conversation, looking at the proposed guidelines and kind of the concepts that are being put on the table with respect to this process. I think provides a really nice framework for initiating a conversation. Again, I think we will all agree there's inconsistency in how short-term rentals are short-term rental compatibility is addressed through various jurisdictions. And to me, this is a step in trying to align and otherwise get some consistency. And again, initiate a conversation in terms of what is TRPA's role and how can TRPA assist in providing some of that consistency. So, with that, I'd like to open it up to the public. Seeing a number of members of the public who'd like to speak today, I do want to remind that we ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes or so. I'm not going to try and cut anybody off today, but I just want to be respectful of everyone's time and the number of people who want to speak today. So with that, our members of the public who'd like to speak today. Good morning.
Got it. Thank you.
Yes.
I wanted to hand these out if it wouldn't take against my time.
I apologize for not having more.
First of all, I've amended a few of my comments to reflect this chart.
Sir, if you could please introduce yourself.
Wayne Ford, residential designer, 731 Linda Court, Incline Village, Nevada. Been here about 43 years. First of all, Mr. Marshall mentioned touch points. Well, the touch point with me is about 200 feet away from my home. So it's real. The issue of environmental documentation, which this agency represents, and best practices, in my view, those two need to be brought together. And I know Mr. Marshall disagrees in that because he sent me a very kind email stating that effect. Basically, if you've got a particular environmental issue and you're going through this environmental checklist, it asks you to check no with mitigation. Of course, this checklist was all no. And I understand the position of what you're trying to adopt before the governing board. But the reality is that you also have a series of guidelines. And those guidelines need to be connected to what you're trying to mitigate, what effect you're having on the environment and people's lives, like mine a few hundred feet away. So in that 2004 document that Mr. Marshall referred to on page 67, by the way, the 2004 initial environmental statement by staff is missing in both documents for the APC and the governing board. I'd like to know who has it. And it's been looked into, and it's gone. So we can't have 14 years of things happening and compared to what was in that document, so we have a new one now. But in that 2004 document, it basically states that TRPA has zoning, and the people at the time said, if, as it says in this little handout I gave you, if the enforcement doesn't take place, then the zoning will not be compatible. And you can read right in there where they said that. So that means that TRP, even though this is being deferred to the counties, has basically another touch point. And that is that if I'm having to live with something that shouldn't be allowed because it's become a motel and the behaviors are so adverse to where I live that I signed up for when I bought my home 30 years ago, then that zoning needs to be enforced. And TRP said they would enforce it. So a complaint should go to compliance for whether it's BMPs, whether it's fire issues or whatever, that there is something going on the property that's in violation of the zoning. And TRP should issue the same letter that I've seen many people get. Stop, or you're going to have big fines come into the legal committee so that you can defend what you're doing is correct. That is one enforcement area that TRP still has on the books. And it was created when this document was adopted by the governing board. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. You guys want to wrestle? Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Janet McDougall, and I'm representing the Residents for Tahoe, a group of residents committed to restoration of our neighborhoods, community safety, and the environment. I should point out that most of our members are El Dorado County residents, but we also have some residents from Douglas County and some from Placer County. As Brandy mentioned, I did participate in the working group. I'd like to say that Brandy and John and their staff did a remarkable job of carrying out the direction provided by the governing board. Unfortunately, the direction the governing board gave them, we feel, fell far short of where it needs to go. The best practices that have been developed here provide good guidance for, you know, what local jurisdictions should look at, but they do little by themselves to address the problems we're now facing. It's plain and simple that prior to TRPA changing the definition of residential to include VHRs, there were relatively few. They were illegal, and owners told the few renters they had to keep it quiet and blend into the neighborhood. Now they are operated as full-blown commercial businesses to the detriment of neighborhood character, and in many cases are CC&Rs that specifically prohibit the renting of our homes for lodging. TAUs located in appropriately zoned commercial areas have been limited, yet there has been no limitation placed on VHRs. The South Tahoe Redevelopment Agency, whose mission was closely aligned with the regional plan, was required to acquire and retire significantly more TAUs than we were allowed to rebuild. Also, density at state line could be reduced. That excess density has now been transferred to our residential neighborhoods, negating many of the environmental gains the projects were designed to achieve. Each VHR equates to more than a single TAU. Each bedroom in the house is the equivalent of a hotel room. El Dorado County has reported 860 VHRs. We know there are many, many more that are operating without permits. An analysis of data relating to VHRs in El Dorado County reveals an average of 3.6 bedrooms. Rounding down and multiplying the reported 860 by 3, there are 2,580 additional permitted TAUs in the unincorporated area of El Dorado County, located far away from a town center with no transit service, generating significant increases in VMT and neighborhood impacts. A large hotel with far fewer units would require a full-blown EIR, EIS, and it would be very tough to mitigate the impacts, yet there has been no CEQA analysis. All of this completely defeats the objectives of the 2012 Regional Plan Update, a plan TRPA is legally mandated to implement. We see these problems all around the basin, and with passage of Measure T in the city, these commercial uses at South Shore are being pushed further away from the town center at state line. Simply put, this is a colossal zoning failure. We now have over-tourism with neighborhood impacts, traffic congestion, and overuse of our recreational facilities, as well as violation of residents' rights to quiet enjoyment of their homes. And importantly, the basin's carrying capacity and our lake are threatened. local government must be brought to the realization that the TOT pie has been allowed to grow beyond what can reasonably be accommodated. More wants more, and it must be stopped. While we support adoption of these best practices, TRPA must go beyond this Band-Aid approach and take steps to limit the number of vacation rentals, locate them in tourist commercial areas in close proximity to town centers. In other words, restore proper zoning and good land use practices. While there are challenges ahead in this regard, there are solutions. TRPA engaged in an amortization program in the 1970s to eliminate billboards, and you can see a court case called TRPA versus King. The city of Anaheim has used an amortization approach with significant success, and it can be used here. Another approach would be to change the definition of residential back to what it was prior to 2004, excluding vacation rentals from the residential definition, and make the existing permitted rentals legal, non-conforming until sale. These best practices are a great start, but fall far short of what needs to be done to protect neighborhoods, our community, and the environment. Please send a strong message to the governing board that they must not consider this one recommended action sufficient to address this growing land use problem that warrants significant and immediate action. Our communities and the environment deserve no less. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Mike House, Incline Village. While I feel the drafted guidelines for STR best practices are comprehensive, then they did do a good job. I find the fact that they are optional very problematic. In our case, we have already been told that Washoe will pick which ones they choose to regulate, and the desired impact in your environmental impact will not occur. I encourage you to use TRPA special use permitting approach, the same thing that's used for bed and breakfast. You're going into our community, you're putting a commercial entity next door to me. Further, Washoe County, through the commissioner, has told us that if the enforcement using a residential allocation system is no enforcement at all. Washoe does not intend to get any more allocations. This does not incentivize Washoe County. This reinforces the need to use special use permitting process to ensure consistent implementation and enforcement. The environmental impact of STRs has been felt in Incline for more than 3 years, and is only getting worse. The action before the APC committee commission requires that a proper enforcement mechanism be put in place before implementation of the best practices. Washoe County advertises that Incline Village is a destination city. We are not. We're a residential community. Washoe County has misled, broken its prior agreements, and ignored its own laws to allow STRs to flourish within Incline Village in Crystal Bay. We need TRPA to take responsibility for STR's use within the Tahoe Basin. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Linda Newman from Incline Village. We've invested hundreds of millions of dollars to protect our lake, while the lack of mandatory and enforceable regulations of short-term rentals are undermining our investment. It is also threatening the health and safety of our visitors and everyone who lives, works, and recreates in the Tahoe Basin. While I feel the best practices and neighborhood compatibility guidelines are a good starting point, I ask you to consider developing a core set of guidelines which all jurisdictions must comply. Instead of deducting housing allocations for noncompliance, TRPA should cease issuing all TRPA permits to that jurisdiction. This is the best way to ensure true enforcement. Restrict the number of cars per short-term rental unit to 2, regardless of size. It is easier to enforce than counting the number of occupants. It is also the simplest way to have true neighborhood compatibility, while also reducing the number of cars entering the basin. To spend money on mass transit to accommodate short-term renters misses the point. Instead, I propose you encourage our visitors to carpool to Tahoe. It costs nothing, and educates our visitors on ways to protect our environment before they leave their homes. The report on the number of vehicle trips doesn't fit our environment. We have large amounts of snow with sidewalks that remain icy and snow covered for months. We have no street lights, and our community has over 1,500 feet of elevation change. Although the report states that short-term rentals will walk and not increase trips, this statement reflects a lack of knowledge about life in our community. We need a comprehensive environmental assessment of the impacts of short-term rentals in our residential neighborhoods. The number of tourists used to be restricted by the number of campsites, cabins, or hotels. With the onslaught of Airbnb and other internet sites, there are now many hotels on every street. This has had a huge negative impact on our environment, our safety, and our communities. Some jurisdictions have chosen to overlook these dangers and have focused on keeping their coffers filled with TOTs rather than implementing regulations to protect us. TRPA is here to protect our lake and to ensure the environmental sustainability of our future. We need TRPA to fill its charter. Please redo the environmental checklist with identifiable mitigation. Please codify the guidelines and ensure strict enforcement. TRPA must take a strong position to lead us out of the environmental mess that unregulated short-term rentals have created. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Yes.
Good morning, board members. My name is Peggy Borland. It is said that before you can fix a problem, you need to first acknowledge that there is a problem. So here's the problem. There are 8,000 homes in the Tahoe Basin that have been converted to or specifically built to be short-term rentals. These units are not accounted for in the tourist accommodation system. In light of this, today's proposal equates to rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. What happens next to begin to fix this problem is up to you and to the governing board, but doing nothing should not be one of your options. This problem could have been avoided 15 years ago when the TRPA first established their standards for how residential allocations could be used by the local jurisdictions. They are called residential allocations for a reason, and that is because they are intended to be used to build residences, not vacation rentals that are often the equivalent of large-scale lodging properties. For reasons that remain unclear, the TRPA failed to follow through on enforcing their own policies that have now contributed to Tahoe's housing crisis, over-tourism in the basin, and the negative neighborhood impacts that you're hearing from people today in the audience. The proponents of Measure T in the city of South Lake Tahoe recognized that local and regional government was too heavily influenced by special interests and their own reliance on TOT revenue to seek a real solution. The proponents sought to give the voters the right to find that solution. The solution came in the form of a citizens' ballot initiative that removes vacation rentals from residential zones over an amortized 3-year period, while at the same time encouraging nightly rental lodging in areas that are zoned for such use. The passage of Measure T established the city's new VHR rules that are consistent with the goals of the 2012 regional plan. Measure T and the voters of South Lake Tahoe have done what the TRPA and local governments lack the political will and clear thinking to implement. It is not too late for the TRPA to walk this back and reestablish their original intent concerning zoning and limits on TAUs. Hopefully this board in your advisory capacity will recommend to the governing board that a serious plan be adopted to bring the TRPA policies and objectives into compliance at the local level. Accomplishing this will require courage, clear thinking, and a genuine commitment to preserving Tahoe's environment rather than protecting the financial interests of individuals and jurisdictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Erin Holland, North Tahoe Fire. First, I want to commend the Commission's work on this very challenging topic. We greatly appreciate it.
Sorry, allergies are getting me today. Well over 40% of short-term rentals in the basin are in our service area. As such, we echo Eric Gavin's comments and concerns in regard to fire and life safety. Excuse me. We also respectfully request that agenda packet page 105, the environmental impact checklist, item 14 for public services, section A for fire protection be revised. There is a cost for performing safety inspections and enforcing compliance. We request the box no with mitigation be selected and that the comment in the box be revised to align with section B by adding the language and which may require additional fire protection to align with the language used in section B as it is written for police protection. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Nice to see you again.
Jim Mallon, 31-year resident of Incline Village, and what I've seen in the last 5 years have been very discouraging. And one of the big problems, as I am learning, is TRPA and or the people around them changing the legal definitions, which I don't see how they can get away with that. The CC&Rs that most of us signed and thought would protect us as far as the residential area we had bought into are either being ignored or unilaterally changed, and very typical. Says no business or profession shall be carried out or conducted about any portion of a residential area. And, you know, that's the way most of us want it. I've been reading stuff that's been put out that has basically said that, well, gee, the impact of a full-year resident is no different from that of a short-term rental. How anyone can believe that is really beyond me. They obviously haven't lived around it. You see a lot of these STRs where, you know, they'll bring in 15, 20 people, all their cars, all the trash. They have no knowledge of the local wildlife and how you preserve them. We've lost a few bears because of STRs. You know, there's really no way to educate these people, so they are a huge problem. One of the other things that North Lake Tahoe Fire, I'm sure will back us up, we've been reading that over 50% of the residential fires have been STRs. These are people that have no guidance, they're told where to get a key, and, you know, go enjoy yourself. Well, we live in a unique environment, and these people are abusing it, not through any intent on their part, but the abuse is there. This needs to be backpedaled. Mainly going back to a residential zone is a residential zone. No commercial use allowed. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else in the audience?
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name's Joe Arton. I am a 45-year resident of Myers. We originally built and purchased our lot back in 1975. At that time, it was residential. Today, I live in the middle of a commercial development. In my immediate area, surrounding me is 13 VHRs. And recently I found out that 11 of them are out of compliance with the new county ordinance. This is really very disturbing to me because myself and several other neighbors have done some extensive work trying to bring our homes more up to date and do remodeling. And now we're subject to living inside a commercial development. I tell you this not necessarily because I'm for or against VHRs, but I just would like to anecdotally give you a view into what's going on out there. I have had occasion to talk to the county person that's kind of in charge of monitoring what's going on in the county with regard to VHRs. Her caseload right now is 150 violations of county ordinance. And this ordinance has been in place for over a year now. And what I see in my neighborhood, within probably 1,000 feet of where I live, is total ignoring of what the county regulations are. And there is no way that the county with 150 violations that they're working on now with one staff person that's trying to handle them are going to be able to enforce what the ordinance dictates should happen. So I just wanted to give you an insight as to just one little microcosm of what's going on in the county, and I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Other members of the public, good morning. Nice to see you.
Hello. My name is Christina Hill, and I just am a little apprehensive about the effectiveness of tying this into the allocation code, part of the code. I think it would be more effective if you put regulations for short-term rentals in the permissible use section of the code and make any kind of short-term rental a special use. Then you would have to get a special use from the county, and that would require a permit with conditions. And if those conditions are violated, then you could go to the code enforcement section of the county to get it rectified. So that's my two cents. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Chair Larson, members of the commission. My name is Pat Davison. I'm the government affairs manager for the Contractors Association of Truckee Tahoe. I also shared a seat on the working group with Mark Salmon. Our association has 385 member companies, many of which work in the basin. Residential allocations are precious to us because they represent work. That's how construction can pay the bills for thousands, hundreds if not thousands of working families in our region. When governing board concern about STR neighborhood compatibility surfaced, we stressed the need for flexibility and a practical common sense approach. Our position is rooted in the belief that land use decisions should be left to the local community because they know better than outsiders what will work, and they are the ones who have to live with the decision after the outsiders have left. We greatly appreciate the changes made as a result of the working group meetings. Those changes are significant and impressive, adding more flexibility and clarity. However, as you read in our September joint letter submitted by our association and five other groups, we still think the local governments need to retain control over site-specific land use decisions without incurring a penalty. Locations as described in land use practices 1 through 5 or transportation practice 1 become the poison pill, or a local government site-specific decision on land use, which might reflect decades of a legitimate activity, doesn't match TRPA practice. It's not the STRs that are located within the quarter mile, it's the STRs that are located outside those quarter mile or other locational practices. Then the local government is in danger of losing points, which could mean less allocations. Another consequence of using a land use practice for scoring is that it can generate an unintended consequence. If local government discourages existing STRs from a certain area, where does that displaced use end up? And how many jobs are lost if STRs are reduced? Please think through the impact of decisions contemplated today. And if a jurisdiction is developing its own land use practice, which is allowed, it has to explain how the practice meets TRPA intent. That could become a very cumbersome process. Maybe for some jurisdictions, losing points doesn't matter, but for others, it might. We support taking out the 6 practices that rely on site-specific implementation and keep the other practices that are relevant and enforceable. That's common ground we all probably can stand on. When removed from the guidelines, those five practices and the one transportation practice could become the basis of an incentive program awarding bonus units to jurisdictions. That's a more positive way, a more local government friendly way, in our opinion. Another action that TRPA could take would be to assist local governments with beefing up enforcement powers, such as helping them apply for grants to hire more inspectors. Strong enforcement is, again, common ground and a practical answer to nuisance issues. More globally, though, it seems to us that TRPA has become the STR battleground, either in advance of or concurrent with what's happening at the local level. What's happening at TRPA is being duplicated, happening more intensely at the local level, which is where that kind of change should be happening. Citizens are motivated to get involved and make their voices heard as local policies are being discussed. That's normally how land use decisions and the process works day in and day out. Your elected representatives deal with land use controversies on a regular basis. That's part of their job description. That's not going to change anytime soon. The rubber hits the road at the local level, and that's why we are so passionate about wanting local leaders and constituents to be the decision makers, not TRPA, about what should go where. We think local government is responding to the pressure placed on it by many of the citizen activists you see here today. Jurisdictions have taken action and will continue to fine-tune their programs. We think local government deserves to be trusted, and I hope the governing board sees that as well. My last point is about the slippery slope. Where do we draw the line? The next big issue could be marijuana grow houses. Should TRPA be telling local government where those grow houses could be located? No. TRPA's involvement should be limited to those issues that affect lake clarity and are bigger than any one jurisdiction can solve, like aquatic invasive species. So just to recap, leave the site-specific zoning to local government, take out the five land use practices and one transportation practice, put them in a bonus unit incentive program, and then help local government beef up enforcement activity targeted at bad actors. Trust local government because they are responding to the concerns of their constituents. If local government elected officials ignore those constituents, the risk is severe, such as recall or ballot measures. The wheels of government turn slowly, but the important point is they do turn. Trust the local government process because it is closest to the people who are directly affected by those decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a letter that I had written that I want to make sure that has been seen.
If you could. Yeah, has it already been sent to us?
It has, but I'd like to be sure that you've seen. I sent it on Monday, so I don't know if it's been received.
We have, yeah. TRPA staff are fantastic at getting us the most up to date. We've been getting
okay.
Email up until last night regarding your comments. So trust that we did get those comments and have them as part of the record. So thank you.
Hello, my name is Diane Hirschberg, and I'm a resident of Incline Village. I'm also a retired lawyer, and so I spent a great deal of time in the beginning of understanding this short-term rental crisis to try to discover why we have short-term rentals. And the reason that we even have them, as you know, is that in 2004, TARPA had a staff report that said, we recommend there be short-term rentals, vacation rentals allowed, and that the enforcement be left to the local government officials. In that document, it said that if the local government officials don't enforce neighborhood compatibility guidelines, then TARPA will take action on zoning, and we will say those local jurisdictions cannot have short-term rentals. And in the letter, I've quoted you to the dates of the staff reports and the dates of each of the actions I'm going to talk about. And the reason this is important is I think most of the jurisdictions have really taken significant actions, but Washoe County has not. And that's why we're saying the allocations isn't adequate. And before I even start this, I need to say that Brandy did a spectacular job on listening to all of the concerns and actually documenting in those guidelines a beautiful set of guidelines. So the guidelines would be great if they were followed. And interestingly, of the local jurisdictions, most of them are addressing most of those guidelines. And that became clear as the residents started to attend the meetings of the committee. So the problem we have in Incline Village is that if you leave this to the local government, we will have no protection and the environment itself is at issue. In Incline Village, we have the following, and I think these are facts that you need to think about. Our local fire department said that 50% of the household fires are based on short-term rentals. Short-term rentals account for 13 to 20% of the available residences based upon the number of units that we are told have been rented. However, Washoe County has no list at all other of the list of where the addresses are of the short-term rentals. They're not only doing no inspections, they can't give them to the sheriffs or the fire department, so they don't know where they are, but they have decided it is cheaper to have Airbnb and the local property managers and other internet hosts issue the permits for the transient occupancy tax. So they don't even know where they are. That's how much they care about protecting the local environment. A fire in Incline Village is going to be disastrous for all the rest of the lake, as we know. And so we really need to make sure that Washoe County is putting in a protective ordinance. Now, you have heard that Washoe County is currently working on an ordinance. And when did that begin? If you'll see in my letter, in 2017, TARPA had several meetings where it hired some outside consultants to come in, host compliance and others, to teach the local jurisdictions what are good neighborhood guidelines. The training was good because it seems like Douglas County and a lot of the other counties learned about the training, adopted, enacted ordinances, and then they have been amending their ordinances because they really cared about their local people. But in Washoe County, Washoe County began collecting TOT taxes in Incline Village in 2016. But in 2017, they represented twice to TARPA that they were not collecting any transient occupancy tax. There were no rentals allowed in Washoe County at the lake, and so they did not need to put in an ordinance. I attended the July 2019 meeting at which Washoe County came and said, we're working on an ordinance. We are going to have public meetings. Okay, going to. They hired someone, and she started in July of 2019. Now, from 2004 to 2019, that's where we were, and now they're drafting an ordinance. And I personally, as a retired lawyer, was excited because I believe you draft an ordinance, you take care of the people. And I met with Mr. Liparelli, who is the counsel for the county commission. I brought him the home business ordinance, and I brought him all kinds of ordinances and information. And basically, Washoe County is going to look at a different ordinance than is contained in your guidelines. Now, I admit that until we see the ordinance, we don't really know what's in it. But today is an opportunity for you to hear from the residents. What we're asking is, we think these guidelines are very complete and good, and if local governments actually enact protective measures under them, we would go a long way towards having normal lives in our neighborhoods. And the issuing allocations is not objectionable, it's just that it's not going to do enough. So one thing I would ask, if you decide to go forward and approve the guidelines and issue the allocations, is that you do more and recommend to the governing board that they do something to actually protect residents in jurisdictions that are not responsible, that are not responsive.
Ma'am, if you could please.
Yes,
we have other members.
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
That's okay. Thank you for your comments. I didn't really want to cut you off, but I want to make sure we make room for everyone else. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Teixeira.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, staff, and ladies and gentlemen. For the record, Steve Teixeira on behalf of the Lake Tahoe South Shore Chamber of Commerce. We've been closely following this issue, and we've been very engaged. As was referenced previously, we joined with five other organizations to send a letter to the Local Government and Housing Committee. Only some of the concerns that we expressed have been addressed. The proposed locational criteria, those present a number of challenges. We appreciate that these represent a menu of options for local government. However, as has been pointed out by questions on the part of members here, these are not clear. how they're to be interpreted in the scoring context is not clear. So I think we're setting up the folks who have to do the performance review committee work with a very difficult challenge. And I would point out that I'm also serving on the Douglas County VHR Advisory Committee and been to a number of VHR-related meetings at other local jurisdictions. A couple of things. There's no agreement on what the definition is of a licensed professional property manager. There's no clarity around, there's reference in there to tourist-oriented recreational amenities. What are those? How do they differentiate from local-oriented recreation amenities? And clearly, as we've heard again today, there's no consensus on whether there's any agreement on tourist or commercial uses as far as what VHRs are. Some people have a very strongly held belief that it's a commercial use in a residential neighborhood. Other people have the opposite. So there's no consensus there. At previous meetings on this topic, TRPA staff has said that in the 2012 regional plan update, that directed tourist uses go to town centers. Well, I served on the APC during that discussion and those adoptions of that plan. There was no specific reference that I recall to any short-term rentals or VHRs. Tourist uses maybe broadly, but not STRs or VHRs. Those acronyms weren't really in our vocabulary at that time. So saying that this is all a function of what was directed in the regional plan update of 2012, I think that's misleading. So each local jurisdiction is different, as we know, in terms of its designated town centers. For example, Placer County is said in the staff report to have 2,653 short-term rentals within its jurisdiction. Now, ultimately, is TRPA going to ask that all of those be moved into Tahoe City and Kings Beach? Because what we're seeing today is just a skirmish on the issue. You've heard plenty of testimony here today. They want TRPA to get into the regulation of short-term rentals, a ban perhaps. So TRPA is going to have to decide how far are you going to get into matters that are better left to local government jurisdictions, where not only do you have one person sitting on the TRPA board representing a local jurisdiction, when you go to the local level, you have five members representing that. We are generally supportive of the proposed operational and enforcement criteria. However, we would ask that you remove the language that tells TRPA or tells the local government how to spend their TOT. If you want to suggest how they spend their permit fees from VHRs, that's one thing, but everybody spends TOT a little differently, and I don't think it's the purview of TRPA to tell local governments how they should spend their transient occupancy tax revenue. In terms of the checklist you have there today, I won't get into a lot of concerns about that. There's probably some that should be circled data insufficient. There are certain statements in the boxes in bold that I don't think have a basis, in fact, but that wouldn't change necessarily your conclusions of the IEC. However, the difference between TRPA and local government is that TRPA is focused on environment. Local governments have to think about what the economic impact of land use and other decisions are made, because that affects their ability to deliver local services. TRPA has no responsibility to deliver local services. These are going to have a lot of impacts. Whatever happens on STRs or VHRs are going to have impacts on the local government's ability to drive revenue to support local services. Lots of economic factors at play. People invested in property, understanding that they could rent their homes. Some of them do that because they need to help pay for those homes. So there's a lot of issues there. Another thing that is bothersome is that these sessions end up being a vilification of visitors. Visitors are the bad apples. Visitors do this trash. Visitors can clog our roads with traffic. There's plenty of local folks that aren't real good when it comes to community behavior. So from a business perspective, a lot of businesses are involved in the VHR industry, and I don't think from a business perspective we should be in the business of vilifying visitors just because they want to come and enjoy Lake Tahoe. Enforcement is the key. The scoring system is out of balance. More points should be attributed to enforcement. Once the city finally got its enforcement act together, it's a much better situation. It's kind of funny how the complaints about VHRs dropped off after Measure T passed. So it's a different day today, but again, TRPA is coming up to a decision, and you're part of it, where how much do you want to start getting into what local government should be deciding? Washoe County's a little late to the table, but they're moving. So I'm not sure that if I was still sitting in your shoes, I would be ready to adopt this as it's written today, because I think there's still some problems with it. But I think you've all asked some very astute questions, You're a smart group of folks, and we'll be interested to see what your decision is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to address the commission this morning? Good morning.
Morning. Let's see. That's already on, huh? Mark Sam, and I was actually part of the working group as well. I'll try to be short and sweet. Really didn't plan to speak, so not super organized in my thoughts, I guess, but just feel like I should come up and say something. You guys have a tough job, you know, the TRPA as well in local jurisdictions. It's basically, I don't think TRPA wants to be involved in this conversation, but they get so many phone calls that they just feel like they have to. And I would just warn that I don't think that's ever going to stop. And if you, until short-term vacation rentals are completely banned. I think a good example of that is there's people in this room up here speaking that were a major part of pushing Measure T through and it passed, and yet that's still not good enough. And I just ask, you know, that you consider there's, and I hope that group considers that there's other people in our communities too, and that's why I represent the construction industry. And for someone that's lived here, maybe not 45 years, I got 23 years under my belt, and I worked at Meek's Lumber, and I built for a little bit, and I'm in real estate now, and it's just tough to find means to make a good living in this community. And so, you know, today it's like the anti-vacation rental people are the ones chirping, but all of a sudden we have a ban, and then maybe you will get contractors in here, and just understand that they have a voice as well, and they're not always available to come and speak to you at Tuesday at 9:30. They're out trying to make a living. And when they're done making a living and swinging a hammer or using a paintbrush or driving a forklift or whatever it is, then they're off coaching soccer or PTA meetings or dance practice or things of that nature. And so it just concerns me that we can't come up with a balanced, sustainable solution. I keep hearing the word sustainable, but it's directed towards one specific thing, like the environment. And it's like, well, the economy does have to come into play at some point. And I think that's our job in local jurisdictions, you guys, to try to find that balance, and it cannot be all one-sided. And so, you know, it's difficult. The operational enforcement piece, obviously, it's like it makes total sense to everybody, and we all came to that conclusion. And I think local jurisdictions are putting some effort towards that. And, you know, it did go on for too long. And so it's good to hear those voices come to the table and say enough's enough, and for local jurisdictions to listen to that, and I think they have. And maybe it's not quite enough yet, but it's a work in progress. And it was interesting for me to talk to Maureen Stuhlman at the City of South Lake Tahoe Police Department to find that the phone just stopped ringing randomly when Measure T passed. Not when it was implemented, but it was 3 years from that date, but it just stopped ringing. And so it just makes you wonder what the motivation is sometimes. You know, complaints have fallen 53% in the city just based on the existing ordinance that we didn't really give a chance to see if it would work. Granted, too little, too late, whatever, you know, it's arguable, but it did go on for too long, and I respect the locals. I live here as well with my family, and, you know, whether it's a primary resident or a long-term resident or a short-term whatever rental, I still have the right to peaceful enjoyment, and we should all fall under the same rules and regulations, period. But just banning things or wiping things out entirely is not a solution at any level. Just like it wouldn't be fair to have unlimited development and no coverage limitations and no height limitations. I mean, we have to have rules. But wiping things out is not a solution. It just digs another hole. So on point here, locational is going to be challenging, and you're really only affecting two jurisdictions, obviously. But it's an effort in some direction. But hopefully we can wrap this up and move on to housing as quick as possible. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who'd like to speak to the commission this morning on this topic? Yes, ma'am.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the planning APC and TRPA staff. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Sharon Kerrigan. I'm the Executive Vice President for the South Tahoe Association of Realtors, and I was on the working group representing realtors and real estate in California. And before I start some of my comments, as I've been attending the meeting, I've been gathering some thoughts. Just want to remind everyone that since the 1970s, our population as a nation, as a state, has doubled. So people that harken back to 1970 and want the quiet neighborhoods that they had at that time, it's just not realistic. And that's in terms of whether or not that's
full-time residents. We've got twice the amount of visitors that want to come and enjoy Tahoe. We are dealing with growing pains. And as a planning agency, of course, that's coming to your attention. I also want to just point out that in areas where there have been bans on vacation rentals, and again, I understand that's not what you're proposing, but with the location criteria, there will be some areas that will essentially be have a ban, such as Maui County in Hawaii. There are folks that find a way around that, and they still rent their property on a short-term basis with things like, these are friends of mine, and I have a trust, and I have donations that are then made to the trust after their conclusion of their stay, and it is to maintain, help me maintain my property. And it's not illegal, and then the local governments do not receive the benefit of any TUT, and there is no enforcement of any kind of short-term rental activity. So just want to remind you about that. Those are the challenges that the local governments have to deal with. So we do support all of the criteria for adoption and maintenance of the strict codes and regulations that you see in the enforcement and operational criteria. We need strong, robust enforcement. Most of the issues that are impacting the residents that you're hearing about today are nuisance related. And the lessons that we learned from Measure T, in the city of South Lake Tahoe, we went to many public meetings and the real estate community pounded the table and said, enforcement, enforcement, we need enforcement. And enforcement takes dollars, and it also takes the right rules. And it took the city 10 years or so to get there. And once they did get there, they now have strong rules. They have funding in place with the permit fees to implement that those effective rules. They have host compliance. They have support. It's too little too late, as Mark Salmon said. And the Measure T occurred and was enacted. As he said, though, we have a reduction, 53% reduction in complaints. The enforcement is effective, and it is working. The concerns with the locational criteria, town centers have been planned and developed to be heavily commercial and tourist accommodation units like hotels. They are not single-family residences, which is what vacation rentals are. So if you're going to say that they need to be located in town centers, there are very few opportunities for those properties to exist. And the consumer today, there are those. I personally get to enjoy attending conferences. I love going to a conference in a town center where I'm in a hotel. I can park a car, and I walk, and I go to restaurants. I go to classes, go to sessions. That's fantastic. That's not what every consumer is looking for. Many are looking for the experience to go and stay in a quiet home with their family, as I did when I was younger in Delaware. We went aunt and uncle, mom, kids, stayed in a vacation rental for a week, walked and rented bikes, went swimming, went to the ocean, enjoyed it. We behaved as any other family would. We followed all the rules, took out our trash. We had two vehicles. We behaved. We got along well with all the residents. Frankly, I don't even know if they knew we were there. When they are managed properly and used appropriately, vacation rentals really are a residential use. It's just one family at a time. And that's what was clarified in that 2004 memo, and that was after much public commentary and meetings reminding folks that when the compact was adopted, this was so obviously intended to be an allowable use that it was then clarified in 2004. Controls can be implemented with caps and lotteries. This is something that's fair across the board in terms of location. When you establish zoning after the fact and you say that they will be allowed in this area but not allowed in this area, there are winners and there are losers. When you have losers, you have lawsuits. And I don't think anyone wants to see that. Location criteria will affect local economies, as Mr. Teixeira said. The primary focus of TRPA is to preserve our lake and the surrounding environment. And a number of years ago, we talked about the buzz phrase was the triple bottom line: economy, environment, and community. And there can and should be a balance. And in order to maintain our environment, we do need that money to implement projects to have protections in place. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Are there other members of the public who'd like to speak this morning? Good morning. Still.
Almost good afternoon.
Almost good afternoon. I'm watching the clock.
My name is Sarah Schmidt, and I'm a resident of Incline Village. And I had a prepared comment, but I'm setting that aside and bringing up some other points. I want to talk about why we're here. First of all, Brandy and the team did an excellent job working on putting those guidelines together. But why are we here? We're here because we have a problem. Okay, the governing board recognized we have a problem. Since 2004, the horses have been let out of the barn, as you say, and we have a problem because at some point, some of those horses need to be put back in their stalls, and that creates problems, and it creates conflict, but we have to come together to understand what it is that we're trying to deal with. Short-term rentals were brought to TRPA because local jurisdictions weren't protecting the community and they weren't protecting the environment. If you open up your packet to page 41, Page 41 is the beginning of, you know, a very detailed environmental checklist. When the zoning was changed in 2004, we can't find the environmental report. So we don't know what it is that they identified that should have been mitigated back in 2004. And now we've got wild horses and wild cows everywhere. And with this particular situation where the governing board recognized there's a problem but restricted this group to only dealing with allocations really was trying to be a carrot and not a stick. But the problem is that the local jurisdictions have been collecting transient occupancy tax since 2004. And they are dependent upon that money. So it gets down to, are these local jurisdictions going to make changes so that suddenly they have less transient occupancy tax? No, they're not. So you can't use a carrot. It has to be a stick. And the governing board needs to recognize that their responsibility and TRPA's responsibility is to protect the environment. And if you look at what the things are on this particular situation here, every single one, there's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 pages of everything being marked as no. And I just want to identify a couple of them. It says that there's no impact on the sheriffs. There's no impact on the fire. We already had a fire person saying, yes, it should say it needs mitigation. All we have to do is talk to IVGID to know that water and sewer increases substantially. They can identify what properties have short-term renters in them because they don't come as a single family. They come as three or four families, and they all pile in, and they use water, they use sewer, they use electric, they bring cars. So to say that there's no impact on the use of our local parks, it's ridiculous. This document states there is absolutely no impact on our emergency evacuation plan. Really? All these extra people and it has no impact on our evacuation plans? Come on. This checklist needs to be redone. And it needs to accurately reflect what's happening in our communities. Because I will tell you, people in Incline Village are being displaced from rentals because the owner of the property is opting to do short-term rentals. This is not just about second homeowners renting out their property. We have LLCs coming in and buying 15 homes to do nothing but have short-term rentals in them. So I'm asking you to please adopt these best practices and guidelines because it's a step in the right direction. But having them tied to allocation, it has no teeth, especially in Washoe County that doesn't need any allocations. There should be a core set of rules that TRPA holds jurisdictions accountable to protect its thresholds and our precious environment. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Good morning. Still.
Good morning.
Just barely.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Heather Lunsford with Carrera Nevada, and I'm here today on behalf of both the Sierra Nevada Realtors as well as the Incline Village Realtors. The Realtors want to thank TRPA staff for all the hard work that they've put into this. I know it's not an easy task, and thank you for allowing us to serve on the work group in place of protecting private property rights. We do echo the statements that were made earlier by the Chamber, California Realtors, and the contractors, and just want to add that we appreciate the changes that were made in the location criteria at our last work group meeting. We still have some concerns as it relates to enforcement challenges and impacts to the economy, and just want to thank you for your time today. I know time is of the essence. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your comments. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to address the commission this morning? Going once, going twice, are you sure? Well, let me extend my thanks to everyone in the audience, every single one of you. I greatly appreciate your time this morning and your passion and your interest in engaging in this issue. It's clear to me as a Tahoe resident, I too live here and am and experience short-term rentals myself. This is an important question and an important issue that needs to be addressed. I think the question in terms of how and what and how we move forward with addressing the compatibility questions that have been brought forward are great questions. And it's clear to me that this is an important first step. But it is just a step in the process. That is what has been what has resonated with me hearing you all speak this morning, really, that this is I didn't hear any of you suggest that we not act this morning. It's more a question that this not be the last step in the process. I suspect the governing board has heard many of your voices as well. I will extend that perspective, but know that your voices are heard and that we do know that this issue is something of great concern. I think the fact that this is on our agenda today, the fact that TRPA is linking its residential allocation distribution to this question is indicative of the way we're moving this morning. So with that, I'd like to bring it back to the commission for any additional comments or any recommendations. Eric.
Good afternoon. It's been brought up a couple times that Washoe County is engaged in an ongoing process to develop a countywide ordinance, not just a set of guidelines for incline, but a countywide ordinance, a countywide set of regulations to address short-term rentals. We've participated in the working group that Randy put together, thought it was very impressive and very well done. You know, once again, the productivity and ability of TRPA staff to jump on something and put it together was very impressive. The work that my colleague Kelly Mullen, that's been mentioned here a couple of times, is doing in that ordinance is very focused on enforcement and operations, heavily focused on that. We're not sure yet about the locational context of our eventual ordinance. We're very supportive of the locational operational concept within the plan that TRPA is putting forward. But at this time, the county's position is that those locational issues are so complex and involve so many different variables that those locational issues need to remain with the county. And that's the reason that I'll be voting no this afternoon.
Thank you, Eric. Any other members of the commission like to speak before? Please, Bruce.
Listening to the testimony, this is obviously only a first step. It doesn't really address many of the heavy concerns. I have to say, as a resident of South Lake Tahoe, in speaking to some realtors now, since the passage of Measure T, they are starting to experience the shutdown of some VHR locations and seeing those freeing up for workforce housing, and that the issues here are broader than just one industry. There's also another industry involved here. And during the heyday of VHRs in South Lake Tahoe, renting was hard for people that worked in Tahoe. And so just one aspect. There is also this issue of commercialization of the residential area. The fact that the city of South Lake Tahoe and other jurisdictions collect TOT is an admission that this is a commercial activity, not a residential activity. But I think this is a first step. It does not come close to address the underlying concerns being discussed today, but I think it's a good step.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Jennifer.
Just a quick thought, because unfortunately I do have to leave, and unless the vote occurs as soon as I'm done talking, I won't be able to stay for it. But I echo what Bob was saying earlier about the quality of the comments and how I also did not hear anyone that was absolutely and adamantly opposed to the starting point. And so I found that to be very helpful, except for our own members who feel so they can't vote for it. It does sound like that there could be some rebalancing of priorities, whether or not the land use is, you know, has value, I don't know. And some of the public safety should have higher points, this, that. It seems like there could be different emphasis placed on different things, depending on how those points are assigned. However, at this stage, it's for me sort of the concept of should the perfect be the enemy of the good. So I would be fine if all my colleagues chose to vote this in as a starting point. I would also be fine if the staff felt that based on the comments today, they wanted to rebalance a few of those points as well before it moved forward and bring it back to the next month. I'd be fine either way. But it does seem like this is it's a needed step in some regard, although there's still a lot of work to do in this arena. So.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hillary.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone for the public input. There are a lot of different options expressed to address this broader problem of vacation rentals. The governing board gave the directive for the local government housing committee to develop a third criteria in the performance review process for allocations, and that committee has grappled with that over several months, and I definitely observe some frustration with being limited to that one piece of the solution, but they really have worked through it and created this criteria and guidelines. If I read correctly, I think it was a unanimous vote of the working group to forward this on to us. So whether that meets the intent of what the governing board wanted, then that's really up to the governing board to decide. I am concerned with some of the subjectivity that's in the guidelines and how that is going to be fleshed out in the scoring process. I'm concerned that every 2 years we're going to be sitting here having this exact same debate of whether one jurisdiction or another has adequately addressed these particular issues. Also a little concerned that it'll become comparative, that the scoring will be influenced by what the different jurisdictions are doing rather than jurisdiction has done something, so check the box. It'll be, well, have they done as much as, you know, the other jurisdictions? Again, just concerns of mine that I think the governing board will need to grapple with. On the IEC, I know it's not technically required that there is a explanation for each of the no impact boxes that are checked. I'll just throw it out to staff. It may be prudent to adopt the expanded IEC model in this case in order to provide more transparency in the analysis and methodology. In terms of the guidelines themselves and the criteria, technically, I think they're definitely addressing the majority of the issues that have been brought up. Mostly what I've heard throughout the years in public input is that the neighborhood compatibility issues are related to, you know, parking, trash, noise, all things that are kind of tied to occupancy. So I'm a little concerned that occupancy has such a low weighting in the scoring on the operational criteria. And again, I don't really see the nexus with the water quality requirements. Water quality is absolutely very important throughout the basin, and we all can be doing more. But I just don't see how that relates to neighborhood compatibility and the difference between a property functioning as a vacation rental versus a long-term rental and how that impacts water quality. So if I would put it out to the commission that if we wanted to put more weight into the occupancy criteria, that perhaps those 2.5 points switch over to occupancy and water quality continue to be worked on in other venues, given that there's not a lot of bang for the buck on these properties that are being used for vacation rentals. That's it.
Thank you, Hillary. Tim.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have to leave, but I don't want to create a loss of quorum. So I just wanted to make sure that that's not going to be, but I do would like to vote.
Okay, understanding that. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak before we move forward? I just want to say parting few comments or just a few last comments here. One, the locational standards have, we've heard a lot today about some of the challenges that the locational standards bring, and I appreciate and respect those issues. As I indicated, I too had many of those questions. My sense is that there is flexibility, and Hillary, I do appreciate some of the issues that you've raised, particularly with respect to water quality. What I've been encouraged by with TRPA, particularly in the last 5 years or so, really is the willingness to essentially adapt. And so my hope is that this is, as we've talked about, a starting place in the conversation. If moving forward with the next round of allocations, there are flaws that come up, there are issues that arise, that we have the opportunity to adjust. The code is not a static document, as we're seeing today, and I think there are going to be opportunities, or at least I trust there will be opportunities, to address code changes as necessary, whether it be related to specific requirements or the way that they're being implemented. Some of the subjectivity that's been brought up, I think, is valid. So with that, I'd be happy to hear from any member that has a recommendation to move forward this morning, this afternoon. No.
I'd go ahead and make a recommendation. Start with number one. A motion to recommend approval of the required findings, including a finding of no significant effect. I would add to that simply that the staff may want to include more information related to the no impact analysis.
Thank you.
Second.
Excellent. Motion by Hillary, second by Bruce. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
Nay.
Excellent. Eric? It looked like Eric, Lewis, and Eric.
Tim.
Oh, and Tim as well. Thank you. Yeah. I think Eric, Tim, Lewis, and Eric.
Yes.
Correct? Excellent. You want to keep going, Hillary?
You're going to make me do it all.
I won't make you. It was a request more
anyone
than
else?
Anything.
Yeah. Number two, I'll make a motion to recommend adoption of the ordinance adding STR neighborhood compatibility as the third criterion to the performance review system as directed by the governing board.
Excellent. Excellent. Again, motion by Hillary, seconded by Bruce. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
I believe the same nays. We have Eric, Tim, Lewis, and Eric. And Kevin, sorry. Did I get that all right? Again, Eric, Kevin, Tim, Lewis, and Eric. Excellent.
And thirdly, John, you're going to have to move your head.
Sorry.
Process, did I, John, anything?
No, I think it would be useful maybe once after this vote for the vote, people who voted nay, if they hadn't already expressed their reason why they voted no, to do so. That might help us address those either in bringing forward something to the governing board or alerting the governing board as to why there were negative.
Excellent. Thank you.
And third, I'll make a motion to recommend that the proposed guidelines be used during the future application of the performance review system, with one modification, that the water quality criteria be removed and those 2.5 points be included in the scoring for occupancy.
I'll second.
Again, motion by Hillary, some slight amendments there, seconded by Bruce. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. Could you raise your hand, please?
Thank you. So the nay votes being Eric Young, yeah, Kevin Drake, Louis Carrilla, Tim Calcerate, and Eric Gibbon. Yeah. Yes. That's a great question. I will look to.
You, since you cast your vote on the motion, you didn't cast a vote, then that was the operative motion to pass the program. In the future, you can amend the motion. But since the motion on the program has already been voted, either you should record your vote as a yes, no, or abstain.
Excellent. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, the majority.
John, we can't hear you.
The motion passed.
John, is it possible to make another motion? The motion that has been made is the one that carries it this time?
The motion that's made was the recommendation.
Okay.
I think Hillary's on record as to what her intent, Ellery was on record with why she voted no.
Okay.
Or abstained. Excuse me. But there are others who did not, you can also express your the rationale for your vote.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. That was, I think, perhaps the most contentious vote that I've participated on in the APC, so super fun. I definitely, again, appreciate all the members' engagement. As John indicated, I think I'd love to give the nay votes an opportunity to weigh in regarding their perspective. Hopefully that can give some direction to staff and some further context to the governing board, so when they're moving forward with their decision, that they have some thoughts from you regarding why you decided to vote nay today. So, Eric.
I would just qualify that by saying, if you haven't already done so,
yeah.
we know... if you haven't already articulated it.
Okay. Eric?
Very briefly on number one, my no vote is based on the public input today regarding the no impact down the board on the IEC. I thought that testimony was compelling and interesting. And on the other two, I've already voiced the county's position that the land use segment of the proposals should be a local consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric. Kevin?
Well, I fully support the general direction. I think there's quite a bit of subjectivity here, and I think the location requirements are going to be difficult to evaluate and could put some allocation burdens on Placer County in particular that may be unfair. I also, one thing that wasn't brought up is the evaluation criteria right now. It says like 90 to 100 and then 75 to 90. There's no distinction there between, 91 to 100, 90 to 75. So if you lose 10 points on location, that could clearly have allocation impacts. With that said, I think the intent here is to light a fire for the jurisdictions that aren't doing enough, and this isn't actually doing that for Washoe County in this case. So I question the efficacy of doing this right now. I love the spirit, but I think it's questionable how it's going to be implemented and how effective it's going to be. So as much as I want to vote for this in spirit, I don't think it's quite tight enough to support today.
Thank you, Eric. Lewis?
I've already voiced my concern with the locational criteria, and like Mr. Young, I was affected by the commentary today regarding the IEC and Motion 1.
Thank you. And Mr. Gavin?
I stated earlier that I think that the health and safety still needs to be addressed, and so I would say that with relation to number one, that would be my concern, is that the IEC should actually have some indication to that on numerous accounts. I think besides just the health and safety, I think there's some good legitimate concerns on impact to sewer districts and water and other things. Therefore, the rest of it, I just, from a health and safety standpoint, that's why I sit on this committee. That's why I had to vote no. And then also, as county representative, I just think the allocations, I just don't think we're there yet, and I don't see how it could be. I just don't feel that it's well-formed for measuring and doing what it's intended to do. I guess I echo the spirit is here, and so, but it's just not there for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to make any other comments before we move on in the agenda? Excellent. Thank you again for your detailed engagement today and the discussion on this. And again, thank you to all the members of the public who have helped guide the commission this morning. With that, I'd like to move on to item 6, planning matters. We have a briefing on the annual local government report, I believe. Brandy? I'll say a different time. So let's reconvene if we can. It looks like Brandy is good to go. So again, we're here at the Advisory Planning Commission on October 9, 2019, and picking up at item 6, planning matters, a briefing of annual local government report. Ms. McMahon.
Okay, great. So once again, my name's Brandy McMahon. I'm the local government coordinator for the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. I realize it's 12:30 and people are getting hungry, and so I'm going to go through this report faster than originally anticipated, but if anyone has any questions at the end, feel free to ask them of me. So today I'm going to present the local government coordination report, and this purpose of this report is to provide you an overview of area plans, projects being implemented within those area plans, aiding in implementation of the regional plan goals and policies, and then to provide an overview of the status of permit delegation memorandums of understanding, or MOUs. So as you know, our regional plan priorities include maintaining effective programs, accelerating environmental threshold gain, and focusing TRP on regional priorities. You know, this includes, we just discussed this, but directing development towards town centers and developing walkable and bikeable communities, you know, providing public transit, and then restoring our sensitive lands. Under the 2012 regional plan, it became clear that we needed a mechanism for developing local plans to replace kind of our outdated plan area statements and community plans. So the regional plan allows for local jurisdictions to develop area plans. And to date, we now have 5 adopted area plans, 1 in Nevada and 4 in California. So this map up here, I never have a good clicker, but so Placer County, the blue area, they developed the first area plan that covered the entire portion of Placer County within their portion of the Tahoe Basin. Washoe County is working on an area plan that includes the portion of Washoe County in the Tahoe Basin. That's that purple area. Douglas is working on an area plan for their portion of the Tahoe Basin. It's called the Tahoe-Douglas Area Plan outside of the South Shore Area Plan. The South Shore Area Plan is that little blue area on the state line. It includes the lower Kingsbury and Casino Core area. That was the first area plan adopted following the regional plan. In the city of South Lake Tahoe, there's 2 adopted area plans. There's the Taurus Core area plan, which extends from the state line along Highway 50 just past Ski Run, and then they have the Tahoe Valley area plan at the Y area, which is the red area. And then most recently, in El Dorado County, the Myers area plan was adopted. So to date, we have around 24% of the total land area in the region within an area plan, and 76% of land area within town centers is now within a regional plan. So I'm going to go over really quickly projects occurring in area plan. So in the city's tourist core area plan, the old Knights Inn was torn down, and so now we have the Bijou Marketplace. Hillary Roverwood worked on this project. So in its place, we now have a new Whole Foods and retail stores and restaurants. It included daylighting Bijou Creek, stream environment zone restoration, and also took advantage of the transfer incentives for removal of development from stream environment zones adopted with the 2012 regional plan. In the Tahoe Valley Area Plan, Barton Hospital, they adopted a facilities master plan, and they recently built a new orthopedic center. In the area plan, a new climbing gym was also constructed. In Placer County, the groundbreaking ceremony for the Tahoe City Lodge project occurred this summer. This project was approved with the area plan. It's in the heart of Tahoe City. It's gonna result in a blighted building being removed with a new lodge, and this is the first hotel that's going to be built in Tahoe City in more than 60 years, so it's significant. Myers, in the Myers area plan, it's really focused on programs aimed at enhancing, I'd say, bike and pedestrian mobility, and then improving public or improving traffic flow. So this summer, the Liberty Utilities was undergrounding utility lines along Apache Avenue to accommodate a future bikeway from Highway 50 to the Environmental Magnet School as part of their Safe Routes to School program. And then a roundabout was constructed near the intersection of State Route 89 and Highway 50 to improve traffic flow. In Douglas County South Shore Area Plan, we now have the Burke Creek Restoration Project, that grassy area right up there that used to be a parking lot, that is now complete. And a tenant in the TRPA office building is currently constructing a curling facility. We are actively working with local jurisdictions on a number of area plan updates, including expansion to the Tourist Core Area Plan. Placer County is proposing an amendment to allow for accessory dwelling units if they're deed restricted, affordable, moderate, or local achievable. We're working on some minor amendments to the South Shore Area Plan, and then, as mentioned earlier, we're working on new plans with Douglas County and Washoe County. And we've also released a new area plan development handbook with requirements for area plans, and then as well as we've documented lessons learned because we've learned a lot through the development of previous area plans. Once these area plans are adopted, the code calls for working in good faith effort with jurisdictions to develop a memorandum of understanding for permit delegation within 6 months following the adoption of the area plan. This is to streamline the permitting process and get on the ground improvements. And so once these MOUs are adopted by the local, by the TRPA governing board, TRPA staff, we work with the local jurisdictions to develop procedural guidelines, we provide trainings, we do an official delegation, and then we monitor permits and do an annual review. All of the MOUs are in slightly different stages of implementation, but if you have any questions, I can go over that later. We did complete an audit of the permits issued by the City of South Lake Tahoe under their area plan. They were the only jurisdiction to have an area plan MOU in effect for all of 2018. We found that procedural improvements put in place after the last audit are working, and we recommended last month to the governing board that they recertify the city's MOU. There's information in the report on best management practices and environmental improvement program projects, but we're also providing all that information on Lake Tahoe Info now, including descriptions of all the environmental improvement projects. So if you're interested in that information, I'd encourage you to go to LT Info. We also worked with the league following the regional plan. We agreed to track coverage changes, so we report on that in the annual report. And so what we're finding is that most new coverage is occurring on non-sensitive lands, and then in our town centers, most development is occurring on existing coverage. So moving forward, we plan to work with local jurisdictions on the development area of area plans and continue to plan to work with the locals on streamlining permitting through the implementation of MOUs. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Wonderfully efficient. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
Are there any members of the commission have any questions or any comments for Brandy? Seeing none, are there members? Oh, sorry. Oh, yes, of course. Hillary.
Sorry. I just wanted to thank Brandy and the TRPA staff for helping the city of South Lake Tahoe with our delegated permitting authority over the past year. You know, since we took that on, there's quite a bit of challenges. It's kind of like a couple moving in together. But in this last year, we've had a, you know, it's a happy occasion, but who does the dishes kind of thing? It's this last year we've had so many more training opportunities that Brandy has really led coordinating those for us. And then in the audit process, both Brandy and Paul Nielsen really engaged the city staff very early on in that process so that we could share perspective on certain maybe code interpretations and things like that, local government perspective and regional government perspective may be a little different, but we were able to, you know, come to a pretty mutual agreement on the audit, and we did get additional commitment to continue with that training and support that we've received for the next year. So I just wanted to say thanks.
Thank you. Steve?
I'd also just like to echo Hillary's assessment. Our collaboration with TRPA staff's been great, and all the TRPA staff that we reach out to on, I wouldn't say a daily basis, but quite often have been very responsive and helpful. So I think that's part of what helps make the implementation of our area plan a success. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Great to hear the positive relationship between local government and TRPA. anyone else? Yeah, please, Garth.
Can someone provide an update as to what's happening with MOU between Douglas County and TRPA or Washoe County and TRPA?
You want to do it? I can do it or you can do it.
Well, I don't have an update, so hopefully Brandy does.
So following the South Shore Area Plan, two MOUs were adopted by the governing board. One was permit delegation within the South Shore Area Plan, and this is for Douglas County. And then one MOU was adopted with Douglas County delegating residential permit review to the county outside of the area plan, and TRPA staff worked with Douglas County on developing procedural guidelines, and then there were some staffing issues, and Douglas County has not yet taken on review of permits. They have not taken that on, but we did meet with Lewis and Sam Booth, the planning manager, and Tom Dallaire, the new community development director, a couple months ago. And our thoughts are it'd be best to focus our energies and the county's energies on developing and getting in place area plans. And then maybe in the future, the county may want to take on the review of permits. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that, Lewis.
Nothing to really add. I can tell you November will be 2 years that I've worked at Douglas County. And when I interviewed, it was a prominent part of you know, my hiring process was the expectation that I'd be prepared to assist with the MOU or at least residential permitting. And as was previously stated, we've had significant turnover in management positions, and as a result, I've never really been in a stable platform to even approve an area plan, let alone take on additional permitting responsibilities. I might as well use this opportunity to state that This is probably going to be my last meeting on APC, as I'm expecting to be leaving the county at the end of November. So I don't know that that's necessarily going to assist this process of the future adoption of an MOU. Yeah, so I guess that's the update.
Oh, wow. And for Washoe County, and Eric, you can pipe in at any moment, but we had a residential MOU with Washoe County, and due to staffing issues around, I would say maybe 2 years ago, we decided to put the MOU on hold. And so TRPA is doing the review, the TRPA review in Washoe County. But we did work with the county to set up an office that's open one day a week. And I have never been there, but it is in Incline or Crystal Bay, and it's in Incline. Okay, so it's open one day a week, and it's staffed by TRPA to assist people.
Eric, please.
Thank you. That's exactly right. The staffing issue was a surprise to us. We had a sudden resignation of really the only person at the county who did those. He was really good at it. We never had any issue with it, but filling that position was difficult. So TRPA was really cooperative, really helpful. Setting up that office in Incline was really helpful once a week. Right now, we feel really positive about the area plan. We kind of feel like we're made it to the peak. We're starting to roll down the hill, getting a lot of the details put together. I would echo what everybody else has said here. The TRPA staff has just been incredibly helpful in helping us get this finally put together. And so I think the county is at this point thinking, let's get this area plan finished, and then we've got 6 months to talk about the entire range of MOUs that may be valuable or necessary. And so at this point, we're open to just keep doing those residential permits with the office open once a week, and sometime next year, start talking about MOUs.
Excellent. Thank you. Is there any other commissioner comments regarding this topic? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who would like to address the commission? Mr. Teixeira, great to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, staff, ladies and gentlemen. For the record, Steve Teixeira on behalf of Lake Tahoe South Shore Chamber of Commerce. Just to observe the contrast between the VHR short-term rental issue and whether or not we trust local government, and Brandy's report here, which is obviously we should trust local government. They're doing wonderful things. So which is it? That is an observation to make. I think local government can be trusted, and as I said before, local government, when you have five elected officials that you're dealing with, as opposed to one elected official representing that group on the governing board, it's a different scenario. But it is an interesting contrast between the two items that you had on your agenda today and our collective feelings about can we trust local government. Thank you for the opportunity to observe.
Thank you for your astute observations. Greatly appreciate it. Anyone else in the public? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. Are there any other comments regarding this item? Brandy, thank you very much for, again, an efficient report on that, and appreciate the discussion as well. It's been good to hear people's perspective. I share Steve's observation. Again, it is the love between local government and TRPA and the success that has been, is I think, can be carried over to a variety of different areas. So thank you for that. Moving on in the agenda, we are down to reports, looking at Mr. Hester for the Executive Officer Report.
Given the late hour, I will just refer you to the quarterly report on page 149 and defer the rest of my time to the general counsel.
No report.
Wow, that was efficient. Excellent. APC members, I'll start with Eric over there. Excellent. Excellent. Mr. Drake? Excellent. Lewis, anything else you'd like to add to your previous report? And I'm out. Lewis, out. Garth?
Nothing.
Excellent. Lee? Nothing. Excellent. Looking over. Jamie, anything you'd like to add?
No. Great meeting today. Appreciate being in the commission.
Thank you for participating today. I appreciate it. Steve?
I'll try to be brief. We did have one of our planning members also leave us recently. Alan Bruce retired after 20-some years of working with the county. He was actually on APC, so wish him well in retirement and also curse him at the same time for leaving. But we will be filling that position with a senior planner position. Also on position updates, the county is looking to fill a deputy director position for the community development that will be located in the Tahoe City office. So anyone know any qualified candidates or wish to be candidates themselves, I believe the filing deadline is the 18th of October. So
thank you, sir. Eric?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Board. We've been working with the power companies plural, PG&E and NV Energy and Liberty, on their power shutoff and the fire situation. So they're proactively shutting power off into certain areas. And so the Eastern Sierra, I guess, and also Western Sierra slopes will be experiencing some shutdowns. They scheduled some today. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So we're working with our planning with the casinos as for fire concerns go. And then that's pretty much where we're at. We know that we've had the boat out on the water and had fire flow stuff happening. That's been good. And also looking at developing a public safety pier, and then that went into a basin-wide plan to put public safety piers around the lake. So we're working to see if there's some funding through NDAO on that and some startup funding. So it looks like they want to take the initiative, and they want to funnel some government funds to us to put those public safety piers in. So we're hopeful, looking forward to that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very kindly. I have nothing to report today. I think you all know that I have taken I've shifted jobs a bit. I'm no longer with the California Water Board. I actually am now with the California Natural Resources Agency, and so I do help coordinate the Tahoe Science Advisory Council and then support CTC in a variety of its programs. So if you have any questions about the council or anything that you'd like to reach out regarding science at Tahoe, you know where to find me. With that, I'll look to the public. Is there any additional public comment, Mr. Teixeira? It's been so long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Teixeira, Tahoe Chamber. Just to say that it's not available publicly yet, but some of us who are on the advisory committee for it are looking at the first draft of the South Shore Housing Needs Assessment. Very important data, very interesting data, and a lot of people speculate about, oh, yeah, VHRs, we get rid of them, we get affordable housing, and all that. This really is what you need to read to understand the dynamics of all those things, because it's not as a lot of people have characterized. So thank you all. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so kindly. Anyone else from the public? Excellent. Seeing none, I will adjourn today at 10 minutes to 1, at least according to that clock. Thank you.